Welcome to the May 16, 2023 Planning Commission meeting. My name is Mike Rodriguez, and I'm the vice chair, but due to our chair's absence, he's currently attending his daughter's graduation in New York, so I said, have a good time and let us deal with it. So I'll be chairing the meeting, so Commissioner Rocha won't be here. But before we start our meeting, why don't we go ahead and have a moment of silence. Thank you, and we'll go ahead and have a Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. So I'll go ahead and I'm being joined by Commissioner Ingraffia, Commissioner King, Commissioner Myers. So any commissioner announcements before we start? None? Okay, good. So public comment, I'm going to say here that members of the audience wishing to address the Planning Commission on city business matters not on the agenda may do so at this time. For those desiring to speak on items on the agenda but are unable to wait for the item, you may address the Planning Commission at this time. So, and we do participate virtually, so we may take those comments as virtually as well. So, yes.
Good evening, Planning Commission. My name is Rigmore, and I will be going home, so I will give my 2 cents now on the 1175 Scott Street project. In my world, this is a project I love. I find gutsy, unique, and super smartly designed on such a small lot. Since 4 of our properties are located within blocks from this property, I'm very excited that someone is willing to spend big money on a street that is not necessarily a Morro Bay and Bloom street, but already some plants are blooming, and there will be a nice new building, and yippee, a new sidewalk, so the owner is giving the city a great public benefit, and that is always valuable. I so hope you will vote to approve this project tonight. Thank you.
By the way, it was a pleasure meeting you today at 2:45 out there, Ms. Rigmore. You gave me a lot of good information. Thank you very much. You. Anybody else?
Good evening. I'm Terry Simons. How could I resist? The agenda items are, in fact, the agenda. I'm here to speak not on an item on the agenda, but on the agenda process. There's a saying that he who writes the agenda rules the meeting. There's a long tradition in small government wherein staff prepares agendas, generally without the consult with the chair of whoever body is going to process that agenda. That's not unlike Morro Bay. I am particularly concerned about this evening's agenda because it seems overly long, overly complex, and without our regular chairman here, we are lacking probably the person singularly most able to speak to the last issue on the agenda. And when I note that the last issue on the agenda is the last issue, that's a classic methodology for sandbagging an agenda item so that it passes through without significant review or comment. I have a concern with that. I'm not speaking to that item yet. I'll save that for later. In any case, I would hope that acting chairman would use your parliamentary authority at this point to either suspend, drop, or reposition the agenda items such that the last item on today's agenda would either move to the front of the line, which I'm not recommending, or be postponed until our regular chairman is here to give his insights and knowledge on the item, because I think it's critical. Having said that, I still have a minute and a half, but I'm going to pass on that, and I'll hopefully get credit for that later when I overtalk. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. I didn't want to address that at this point, but I'll go ahead and have Scott give us a little information on that item because I did talk to the chair about it. So the last item and what we're planning for that as far as how we're going to do that.
So it's the objective design standards review. I do not recommend that you move the item. I recommend that you keep it on the agenda, that we speak about it this evening, that you take public comment, that the Planning Commission provide comment as well. The item doesn't come along. You don't see a resolution with it. Typically, when you're reviewing something that's going to be part of the zoning code and we're expecting you to get through it, we'd have a resolution that makes that recommendation to City Council, because that's the Planning Commission's job when you're dealing with items that live in the zoning code. Our expectation is that there's going to be more than one meeting on this item, so that is why I'm recommending that you keep it on the agenda. I think it's completely appropriate for the Planning Commission to hear the item.
Thank you. So I think that addresses Mr. Terry's concerns. Sorry. Next, anybody else?
Hi, Jeff Heller. I want to thank you all again for your service to the city in doing this. Thanks for your service. I know these are difficult and challenging issues, and appreciate all the time that you put in out of your personal lives to help guide the city very much. And I'd like to compliment staff for bringing forward this kind of complex issue on B3, because there's so much legislation coming out of Sacramento, which I have a hard time sorting out the implications, and there's some overlap with some of the issues and so forth. So I'm really happy to see that this has been brought. There's some problems with the mic. That this has been brought forward for everyone to talk about. It is a lengthy discussion. I think that might make sense to have a community forum to talk about it. Maybe not, but it's going to have significant implications, good ones, I think, for the city of Morro Bay. But I think it's important that the general community understand that as much as they can. Look forward to your discussion. I won't be staying for it. And I think I appreciate your response, Mr. Graham, explaining the issues that this will be multiple meetings where this will be discussed. My concern was that some action would be required necessarily at this meeting. And there's so much to talk about, and I think the more we can involve the community in discussing this, the better. So thank you again for all your time. Appreciate it.
And by the way, thanks, Jeff, for almost running over me on your bike when I went to go see the Comfort Inn
project. I tried, but you jumped up on the curb.
Yeah, that was after I met Ms. Rigmore, so that was like a half an hour later. So I was running into everybody today, so thank you.
Sure.
Good evening, Betty Winholtz. I thought you might announce the meeting tomorrow night at the high school, that it's the regular Public Works Advisory Board meeting at 5:30 in their new theater, which I believe is behind the administration building when you drive into the first entrance, and that they are wanting input regarding the intersection at 41 and Main, and that there's three options, to do nothing, to signalize, or to do a roundabout. And I assume the discussion will revolve around those three items, and that all the public is invited.
Thank you. Anyone else here? Okay, how about AGP? Do we have anybody else virtually?
Thank you, Vice Chair. Currently, I do see one hand raised in the queue. Judy Lynn Setting, I'm going ahead and unmuting you. You are unmuted.
Sorry.
We can hear you.
Okay, thank you. Good evening, Judy Setting. Hey, so I just wanted to bring to your attention some misinformation that is located on the tracking spreadsheet that is attached to this agenda. And it's item number 30, and it's in regards to Vistra's battery energy storage project that they're doing, the proposal. And the misinformation is in regards to listing the September 14th, 2022 community workshop that was held. And there was a great turnout at that workshop. And the description on the flyer for that workshop told us that we would have an opportunity to talk about the battery energy storage system that was proposed. And all of the groups, all of the tables began talking about that. And the RENCON consultant got up in front of everybody at the microphone and told us that this workshop is for the master plan and it is not to talk about the battery energy storage. Well, people were upset that we, you know, followed orders and went ahead and talked about the master plan. Well, this entry that says that a community workshop was held on 9/14/2022 and it's attached to the BESS proposal is incorrect because it was not an opportunity for the public to talk about this. And I have an email from Scott Collins on October 25th that says the master plan meeting was not the venue for talking about the BESS. It was meant for the community to discuss and share what could occur on the remaining portion of the Vistra site. So I would like this deleted from this section. It does not fulfill a requirement of community input. And I would encourage the board to have something soon for the public because the public, the residents in Morro Bay, would like to discuss this. Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Thank you. I think Commissioner King wanted to say something.
Oh, yeah. Just in response to Betty's announcement, I hope in the community, those of you with high school students will encourage them to attend that meeting tomorrow night about the intersection on 41 because they are very heavy users of that during lunch and after school and before school. And so whatever happens will have really large impacts on the students that use that.
All right.
So bring your kids.
Commissioner Gopia, did you have something as well?
I was just going to say that I attended the meeting that the speaker alluded to, and I can confirm that it was not about the BESS project. And I would say that there is a very, very significant need for public discussion in some kind of a forum about that project.
Okay. Thank you. Okay. With that, is that it on AGP for public comment?
Yes. Thank you, Vice Chair. I do not see any hands raised in the queue, although I did want to respond to the meeting tomorrow is actually not going to be inside of the theater. It is going to be in the same building, but in a different room located west of the theater. It's a cafeteria / space that will be filming tomorrow, the meeting that Betty was talking about. It will not be in the theater. It's going to be in the building, same building, but west of that. And that was all. Thank you.
Thank you very much for that clarification. So with that, we'll go ahead and go to the consent calendar. We have three items on there for the commission's review and approval.
I'll move to approve item A2 and A3 as submitted.
Okay. How about A1? So
A1 is just a receive and file.
Okay, so we have a second.
I'll second that.
Okay. AGP, anybody in the loop virtually?
Thank you, Vice Chair. Currently, I do not see any raised hands in the queue.
Okay, so we'll go ahead and have a motion. We have a second, so we'll take a vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye, but there's one, I think, meeting that I wasn't at. I just don't remember which one.
Okay, that's fine. You can go. That's fine. So we have 4-0 with Commissioner Roshan not present, so thank you very much. So with that, we'll go ahead and go to public hearings at this point, and we'll go ahead and start with item B1, staff.
This is a request for approval of a new 4-bedroom hotel suite with a manager's residential unit above. It's a conditional use permit, coastal development permit, and a parking exception. Technical problem. Thank you. It's just an on-off switch. I think someone was trying to sing bad beat. This is the location. So in the bottom left, you can see the existing zoning map. In the purple area is the C2 PD SP, which is the current applicable zoning, and that's industrial use is not dependent on pedestrian traffic. And just for information, I put the new zoning map on the upper right, and it shows that this is being rezoned to community commercial. So this again shows a little pocket of the C2 area. So it's really just between the east side of West and the west side of Market, north of the hotel and Carla's Kitchen. So there's about 15 parcels in this area, and about 60% are residential. Some of them were originally there. They predate the city. They predate almost everything. And some of them were approved with passive commercial uses, which is like an office, an art studio, storage below. And about 40% meet the intent of the zoning district, which is sports fishing supply and custom car and auto metal. Development standards, this shows the standards for the zoning district and the overlay zones in the center and the proposed project, which meets or exceeds the requirement for all criteria. Project overview. The commercial portion is a two-story, four-bedroom hotel suite. The lower level is fully ADA accessible with all of the suite amenities available, and the bottom image shows that it's the bottom two floors of the hotel. This is from a north elevation. And the floor plan on the right is the ground floor, which is ADA compliant. A little more on the commercial portion is the second floor layout, and the second floor includes bedrooms and bathrooms and stair access to downstairs. The residential portion is on the top floor, and it includes a single-level manager or security residential unit that also includes a roof deck. And this is a floor plan on the right of the living space on the third floor. This is the roof, which shows the roof deck, and then the balance of the roof is solar panels as well as condenser units for the three floors. Project site access and circulation. Three parking spaces are required, one ADA van accessible, one standard space, and one compact space is provided, which requires a parking exception. And the image on the right shows the blue arrows are the parking spaces. The yellow arrow surrounded by blue shows the ADA access from the parking space either into the building or out onto the public sidewalk. And then it shows that there's a four-foot setback between the building and the property line for pedestrian access all the way around the building. Hotel signage is included in this request, and as you can see from the image on the left, it's a hanging sign that says Stowaways on Scott, and the proposed sign is 2x10 background with 10-inch letters for a length of 9 feet 5 inches for a total of 7.81 square feet, and the hanging sign maximum size allowed is 8 square feet, but the hanging sign includes the whole background. So there will have to be, there's a condition to adjust the size of the sign to meet the criteria. So basically the empty space around the lettering will go away. And the applicant is proposing a mural, which is 4 feet tall by 24 feet in length. And as shown on the north elevation, it's proposed to go on the third floor on the north side of the building, which says Morro Bay CA, which is kind of representative of what you see on cargo containers, that they have the company name or the location or some language. And the mural really, with just text, does not meet the mural criteria. So one of the conditions would be to modify the mural and send it back for community development director review and approval. Landscape and hardscape. This shows on the left the site plan, and around the building are pavers and silver carpet or equivalent plant. And there is a street tree on the left side of the parking space. And the parking spaces are permeable pavers, and in the center is concrete. The image on the right shows the upper floor, and there is another street tree up there, and there is a little more ground cover along a planter on the balcony. So the current zoning code really doesn't have design review criteria for commercial buildings, but I did look at the proposed zoning criteria, and I just wanted to review a little of those. They're not technically applicable to this, but this building does a pretty good job of meeting them. So building transparency looks at required openings for non-residential uses. In this case, a hotel really, this building has transparency, but a hotel room is really not something that's required to be open to people walking down the street. The building has visual interest, and the building has articulation on all visible sides. Also, design review is exterior building material and colors. This is proposed to be a unified palette of neutral colors, consistent use of compatible materials, and the building articulation, again, is on all visible sides. Finally, pedestrian access, and this shows the blue star is where the property is located, and it's a third of a mile to Morro Bay downtown, shops and restaurants, tenth of a mile to the Embarcadero, again, shops and restaurants, fishing excursions, and boat rentals, half a mile to Morro Bay Rock and the beaches, and a quarter mile to the freeway. Exterior lighting proposed is barn lighting with a downward cast, so it meets the dark sky criteria, and that is on several places around the building. So the staff recommends approval of the conditional use permit, coastal development permit, and parking exception by adopting Planning Commission Resolution 07-23, which includes findings and conditions of approval.
Okay, thank you, staff. So we'll go ahead and have Planning Commissioner questions at this point. Joe, any questions or comments? None? Aisha? Commissioner King?
I have a few questions for staff. The sidewalk requirement, that's a public works requirement. And so is that something that's required for all new development with the idea that eventually it'll connect the whole street?
Yes, and I think it's especially enforced with commercial projects. A lot of residential have the requirement, but it's deferred.
I see. Yeah, because I think it's the only chunk of sidewalk at this point, but hopefully in the future it'll connect. And then I also just had a question in regards to the lighting. Are there ever public works requirements for lighting on the actual street? I know this is a really small street, really narrow, but is there anything like that related to?
They didn't require anything of this project.
Okay.
And we wouldn't normally have lighting associated with this that would be in the public right-of-way. But for larger developments, you might, like if it were a shopping center or like a track, that type of thing, is when those types of improvements would be typically triggered.
Okay. That's all my questions for now.
Okay. Commissioner Meyer?
I brought this up with you guys already, but I'm going to bring it up for the sake of the public. When the zoning changed from light industrial or whatever its previous use was to the current zoning, was there a discussion amongst staff or amongst the public, because I was not on the commission at that time, with respect to protecting the existing uses in this area? In other words, there's existing industrial fishing use. Fishermen get up early. The contrast between a hotel suite and someone who gets up at 4 in the morning is significant, and there's associated noise. Is there a way to protect, or has there been discussion about protecting those existing uses from future complaints by perhaps this owner or another owner in the future? Any discussion there you'd like to share?
I mean, when the land use and zoning changes were proposed, they're similar to what was previously there. I think the recognition was that there's a neighborhood somewhat in transition. There are a number of residential units dispersed in and around the existing sort of commercial and maybe light industrial type uses that are there. It's not something we typically receive complaints about. So that seems to be, they seem to be get along well with one another. I think people realize what they live next to, and you know, if you want to build your your unit there and have a commercial space below it and a residential above, which is what several of them do. You're kind of in an area where you have other commercial uses, and it hasn't really been an issue to this point. I would say you're actually we've done several of these projects over there in the last several years. And we haven't really run into any issues with that. In fact, this is the first time that that issue has ever been brought up.
Okay, I only bring it up, and it's similar to, let's say, something like an airport, or where over time, the more and more housing comes into a neighborhood, and that guy who was there for 75 years with his whatever business is now suddenly the odd man out, and I just would hate to see him or her ostracized for something they've been doing forever anyway. But I'm not going to make... I'm not going to belabor the point. I just want to bring it up so that the applicant and everybody is fully aware where they are, and we know about it, and they know about it, and we're not going to listen to their comments about it's too noisy in the morning. So basically that's all I have to say on that. my second question is, I noticed the roof has solar panels all over it, but I also know that in California solar panels suddenly changed as of a few weeks ago, and it doesn't make the same sense that it used to today. Are the solar panels in any way required by your conditions? I didn't notice anything.
They're not required by the city, but they have been, unless it changed in the last 3 weeks, they have been required by the state.
Okay, thanks.
Okay, and I'll just finish up by asking a couple questions. By the way, I did go out there for maybe 20 minutes to 30 minutes just to look at the applicant's property, but I ended up walking the whole block because of the unique character. I had never seen anything like that in Morro Bay. So just to look at it and the different types of uses and what's going on. But I did have this question because of it was in the staff report. Do we foresee any future fishing industry-related uses happening? In other words, are we getting our door knocked down for these kind of traditional uses? Because we are in transition, right? This is you could see it happening, literally, if you go out there. So it's not like, it's related to what Commissioner Meyer's asking. Are we walking all over somebody else's traditional use by transitioning? Something like that. So do we have anybody waiting in the queue for fishing industry-related uses? No.
Not to
be no. Okay. I just want to clarify, gets back to what Commissioner Meyer is asking. And this question, so the California Coastal Commission has not yet certified a report that we submitted, so how could this potentially impact this project if they haven't certified?
It's approved and deemed complete under the old zoning code,
okay,
which is the one that's currently in effect for the most part.
Okay, because that kind of stuck out that it was being moved forward with, even though we had not received certification from the California Coastal Commission. I just wanted to bring it up again. How does it impact the applicant? Because I don't want there to be a problem.
Right.
Okay. One other thing. Can you just elaborate on the parking that currently exists there and what potentially could take place with this kind of change and then potentially more changes? Because when you look there, down there, you kind of think about parking because we're going to have it here. But
so you mean generally in the area?
Yeah.
So generally in the area, there's a lot of parking demand in the street.
Okay.
This project is meeting the parking required for this project. So they are providing off-street parking for this project, whether they have guests and need parking elsewhere, they would be in the same position everyone else on that street is.
Yeah, and the reason I ask that is because we're going to have to find that we're going to give a parking exception, right, as part of the findings.
Just for the size of the space.
Yes, so we need to find that. So that would be part of the reason I asked about parking in general, because we have to find that we can go ahead and grant an exception for parking. Is that about right, staff?
That's correct.
Okay, good. Commissioner King?
Could you clarify the size difference?
It's the 8.5 wide by 18 instead of 9 by 20.
Mm-hmm. I did notice the applicant was driving a small car.
And I think my car would fit in there, too.
Okay, good. Because, again, that's a major finding we're going to have to make. So thank you very much. So at this point, we'll go ahead and move it to the public comment portion, so obviously we'll start with the applicant.
Welcome, Planning Commission. I'm very excited to present this opportunity to the neighborhood and the city. I bought this property in 2015. It's the first ever piece of real estate I ever bought. I was excited at the possibilities in the area, and I sort of parlayed that. I ended up being lucky enough to buy a house about six blocks away about a year later. I feel heavily invested in the area. The success of downtown Morro Bay and the Beach Street District specifically. In the 2017-2018 area, and I see some a lot of neighbors in the Beach Street District, it was a bit of a rough patch for the area during that time. These Surf Street stairs were abandoned, which eliminated lots of pedestrian coastal access for a couple hundred people. The Beach Street specific plan was abandoned during the general plan update, and that had previously called for a bluff top viewing deck above the triangle parking lot. The sidewalk completion project was abandoned by the city in part in conjunction with the Surf Street stairs being abandoned. And lastly, $2 million in PG&E undergrounding credits had been set aside specific to the Beach Street District, and the city decided to end that undergrounding district and sell those assets. And so the district faced a number of setbacks there, and combine that with, if you've walked Scott Street, sort of the, I don't want to call it unattractive because I see the vision and the hope on Scott Street, but it isn't one of our more attractive streets in town. We have recently had some tasteful development on West Street as well as Market Street. And I'm hopeful that the infill process that the general plan calls for and that the downtown waterfront strategic plan has called for can be this project maybe prime the pump a little bit for some other creative projects in town. So I'm here just as an applicant myself. This is my first development effort. I spent thousands of hours sketching possibilities and seeing what's possible on this small lot. I worked with so many members of the planning staff, including Scott and Nancy and Cindy and formerly Joan and Carl. And we have a project in front of you that I'm excited about. Here with my wife, who starts as an ER nurse come September. We're invested in the area, and I also have my architect Andrew Goodwin, who is certainly capable of answering questions as well as they come up. And I think that's about it. So thank you very much, and good luck in your deliberation.
Okay. So we'll go ahead and let others speak at this point here, and then we'll go ahead and go to the virtual part. Hello.
Hi. Excuse me if I stumble because I don't like public speaking. I'm Christine Barrett. I'm probably the most affected neighbor of this project. And yes, Scott, I do know where I live. I've lived here for 33 years. So I understand that this is all done by zone and code, and it was the future. And I know this is going to happen, and I don't have I don't have anything against the buildings. What I do want the commission to question is the size of the rooftop deck. Why is it that large? Is it accessible with the hoteliers or the hotel occupants? Is it going to be a party up there? I am the one little single Surf Street beach house that will be listening to all of that rooftop deck. There are many cement buildings that are surrounding me, and the sound just bounces right into my yard. I realize that people will be able to see into my yard. I don't care, but I do care about the sound. I do care about landowner abandon, you know, the The landowners on Scott Street don't seem to be doing anything to improve the commercial buildings that are on Scott Street right now. So I'm just concerned about any future landowners that may not be present to be concerned about their neighbors and their neighbors' peace and quiet. That's pretty much my only concern, and I know that everything else is done legal schmiegel, so I'm good.
Thank you, Ms. Barrett. Anyone else?
Good evening. How are you doing? I was in the same position he was with you guys about 2 years ago. I'm the new construction that's on Scott Street as well. If you would have told me I was going to be here this far along 5 years ago and got put what I got put through, I'd have never did this. I'm surprised he's going this far because it's a burden. It takes a lot out of you, especially being newly married. It took a lot out of me being married for a long time. So to go through this, I mean, with the city, with you people, and he hasn't even started construction yet, is a big, big, big challenge. To put the kind of time and money he plans on putting in there, I don't know how many of you guys are in this industry. It's significant. I mean, it's huge. It's a huge undertaking. And he's been dealing with this for, I know for a fact, for over 2 years. He's been sitting with the city. They've been hashing things out. So something as simple as saying, oh, well, let's go back and do this or that, it's a lot of money and a lot of time. So I'm all for it. The street is the Ugly Duckling Street. I love my Ugly Duckling Street. It reminds me of when I lived in Hollywood in a flat in a studio. So I'm all for it. I can't wait for it to begin. And I think it definitely helps our little area there. So that's it.
Thank you.
Evening, Terry Simons, Morro Bay. I barely know where to begin on this project, so I'm going to try to say something nice, which isn't always easy for me. This is a spectacularly complex, wonderfully articulated, beautifully drafted, impeccably detailed series of loopholes. When I start looking at the project in depth, the phrase, devil's in the details, comes to mind. I find many, many things that I want to question, and I don't really have the time, but let's start with the handicap parking space. It's billed as a van handicap parking space, and as I read the federal, state, and local interpretation of a van handicap parking space, it's supposed to be 3 feet wider than a nominal handicap parking space, which by my math means it has to be 18 feet wide, not 17 feet wide. I could be wrong. Maybe I'm reading it wrong. Maybe it's misinterpreted on the plans. I don't know. Small point. The idea that the entire frontage of the property can be dedicated to driveway seems inconsistent with our local public standards for access to properties for parking. Again, this may be included in the parking exception, although the parking exception seems to be related to having 3 parking spaces, 1 standard, 1 van handicapped, and 1 compact, which leads me to my next concern. This is a 4-room hotel suite topped by a large residential project with a full-on 700-plus fully amenitied roof deck. Now, it's been a while since I was involved with code issues. My recollection of the Uniform Building Code is that you couldn't go 3 stories or more without a secondary access. I don't see the secondary access to the roof deck, and one could argue that it's not technically habitable space. I would argue that it is. The fact that it's not enclosed and it's not controlled aside, it is still, from a public risk point of view, has the potential to have a large assembly of people 4 floors above the street with only a single means of egress in an emergency. There's lots of other minutia, and believe me, I don't have the time to even get into it. Again, I'm very supportive of the project it's obvious that somebody has spent a tremendous amount of time and energy. But unfortunately, I think what I see is a project that is overreached. I think overreached in so many ways. And maybe that's an economic thing. Maybe it's a reach for the sky to have that roof deck have four floors and have a spectacular view. I don't know. But I'm concerned about this project. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Simons. Anybody else?
Thank you, Betty Winholtz. Maybe like Mr. Simons, I have a few small things that stand out to me. One is that this whole idea about a hotel or not hotel, because there's no common space, when we had the zoning ordinance redone, I asked if we could not have a definition and brought into the new zoning about these unhosted hotels. Now, this isn't unhosted, but it has, and they're calling them four bedrooms. So do you rent all four at one time, or are they four individual rooms? And how do you know it's a hotel if there's no common space? So I think there's some lingo that we need to look at, that the Planning Commission needs to look at, and say, as we transition into these new kinds of overnight places, we need to have some definitions so we know what the requirements are so we can be consistent from project to project. I would really appreciate that. Regarding Ms. Barrett's concern about the noise, I think that's very legitimate because it is more residential than it used to be a decade or two decades ago, and maybe you can condition it in terms of hours. I know we already have noise hours, but maybe this is a way to condition it differently. I'm concerned about how much taller this building will be than the surrounding buildings. And I appreciate that the staff has picked out that the mural is not a mural. It's letters and it's not a picture, though I like the idea that something should be there because I think it's going to stick up above everybody else's building right there. I guess I want to acknowledge that this probably should have come later after the new zoning ordinances because obviously they're using it as a commercial vehicle to create a residential area and on the top. And so it kind of seems like a misfit to me because it's not the industrial area that this was. And so this is one of those transition buildings that's making the link between the two, but you're supposed to be operating under the old zoning, but you're actually using new zoning. So it's just confusing. And maybe that's what happens when we're in transition and we haven't heard back from the Coastal Commission yet. And I think that's most of it. And I'm assuming that there's no elevator involved. I didn't see one, even though it's three stories. Thanks.
Hello.
My name is John Mitchell. I'm a resident, full-time resident here. I live on Surf Street. I have a tremendous amount of respect for you folks. The effort that they're putting forward is amazing. And this area, I love the way that the area is now. I know that some change needs to happen. A lot of the businesses don't seem to be upgrading or changing the buildings, and so a lot of the buildings are starting to look really bad. We need new improvement in this area. However, I do have concerns. The space is small. The parking is small. And while it looks like it's detailed out, living in the area, seeing the transit folks coming and going from the valley and other places, I know that they're not all going to have very small vehicles. We're going to see increased traffic, increased noise. And the deck on top is a possibility for parties late at night, and that noise is going to go through this area. One of the comments that my neighbors ask me is, don't you like how quiet Morro Bay is? Don't you love the environment that we have right now? I think that as we open up spaces, there's going to be increased noise from parties, activities, these type of things. If this was a residential home, someone was building a home, which several folks have done in the last 10 years, I would be all for it. I'd be absolutely all for it. We know the who the neighbors are going to be. We know who's going to be there, and that would be great. But in this situation, we're going to have new people come to the neighborhood possibly every single day. And they're going to end up parking because there's not really a lot of off-site parking. They're going to be parking in our neighborhood. And I think that's concerning. However, you know, I do have a lot of respect. That's a tremendous amount of effort. And we do need to see some more improvement in the community. So, thank you.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Mitchell.
Good evening, Commissioner Shirley Frazier. When I received the card in the mail last week, it references a single hotel suite is what the way I read it. And now we're talking about four bedrooms. It's over 1,500 square feet. So now I guess the question would be, following up what others have asked, is this four separate ones? Is it two of two? Is it one entirety, which was the impression I was under? The 781-square-foot deck in relation to 1,023 of residential unit, by my math, that's 75% of that area, and that is not characteristic with anything in this area, or I don't even think with the city of Morro Bay with rooftop decks. I agree, we've worked hard in this neighborhood. I live in this immediate neighborhood to get quiet, to get parties of rentals and things under control. And I go back, I've been here 27 years, so I go way back to when there was a lot of noise, and this does concern me. Again, I was led to understand that the rooftop deck would not be accessible by the guests. But then if we're talking, as the other gentleman brought up, about the egress, and it would need to be, then what would stop people from going up there and doing the partying late at night? There are a lot of people that do have mixed use. Chris Barrett does. So she's not just a resident at this point. I understand that this property doesn't have a view from the west. Having that large rooftop deck would definitely give it that. I also know applying for a CUP, if you guys choose not to develop the property yourselves but sell it, that would definitely make it more marketable to have all of these things intact in place. So I strongly encourage you tonight, if you make the decision or in the future with the entire commission here, that you do weigh these options, because that could go on the property, not necessarily forever, but being sold to someone else and being developed. So my concern is not just for Chris, but for the whole neighborhood, that rooftop deck especially. It's out of character and it's huge. Perhaps a concession could be made to make it smaller, not as inviting maybe for a party area, just for the privacy and the good of the entire neighborhood. So I encourage your strong consideration, and I appreciate what everyone has said. I hope you guys listen to that too. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Frazier.
Good evening, Planning Commission and staff. It's nice to see everybody. My name is Susan Stewart. I'm a business owner in Morro Bay, and I'm speaking in support of Sean Green's proposed project at 1175 Scott Street. This project is in an area which has been a challenge for investment in recent years. The owner told me his students described it as an out-of-business district. Sean's proposal fits the type of development that the community commercial designation prescribes and should be a good addition to the neighborhood. I personally love the modern industrial style shipping container design and materials, which give a nod to our architectural history as a World War II military training base, 1950s style power plant site, and a fishing port complete with canneries and fish processing facilities. I appreciate that the architect has not built out to the edge of the lot and that there is an overall sense of open sight lines with visual interest points from every angle. Having living quarters above the hotel spaces provides housing for staff, which in this case I believe will be the owner. Having a manager apartment is often seen in larger hotels. In this case, it is a perfect solution to on-site oversight. As I recall from looking at the plans, there's no access to the below ground tenants to the rooftop deck. It is only accessible by the person living in the upstairs apartment. The proximity of this property allows walkability to the Embarcadero downtown, and hopefully parking issues won't prohibit approval of this project. It's a new world with new travelers. I can see the contemporary young traveler who flies into San Luis Obispo Airport and takes a ride share to Morro Bay enjoying this kind of lodging. While most travelers we have now come in cars, I think the model is changing. When I travel, I take a Lyft because Uber, you know. I think stowaways would be a great addition to this district and will hopefully encourage other owners to think about revitalizing their properties there. Kudos to Mr. Green for his willingness to invest in his community in such a creative and thoughtful way, and also to his architect. I think it's a fabulous design. Thank you.
Thank you, Susan. Anybody else present that wants to speak on this? If not, we'll go ahead and go to AGP. Do we have anybody in the loop?
Thank you, Vice Chair Rodriguez. Currently, I do not see any raised hands in the queue.
Okay, with that, I would just like staff to kind of maybe chime in on some of the issues that were brought up regarding, I know there's an elevator, the handicap parking space, you know, deal with some of those issues before we totally close down public hearing and maybe give the applicant one more shot at it. Okay.
So the hotel is a single hotel with four bedrooms, so it would be like renting a house. There is a small elevator that doesn't meet commercial requirements but is allowed for residential, and since the manager's unit might also be doing maintenance and other things, they wanted an elevator to get equipment up and down. The roof deck is only for the residential level. They could not make it work. The site is too small, and they couldn't make it feasible for an elevator that would accommodate the hotel guests. The parking is three spaces. One space is slightly smaller because the site is so constrained, but otherwise it meets the number of parking spaces on the site. Let's see. The height meets the height requirement. The fact that there really hasn't been any new development, as Mr. Kennedy mentioned, in the area is why the older standard where things were closer to 25 feet is really what you see there. But I think anything new will probably try to maximize the height. So this meets the development standards. And in the only exception that it's requiring is the parking exception for the one compact space. As far as noise, it's a C2 currently, kind of, because Coastal hasn't certified the new zoning code. It's a C2, which is an industrial use zoning district for businesses that are not dependent on pedestrian traffic. So they're a little louder and they're a little more intense. This is a quiet use. I think the original intent was that it would be for people going on a fishing excursion. So I think the intent and the design was trying to comply with the zoning district of kind of fishing, industrially oriented uses. Did I cover everything?
Yeah, and I think that gets back to the other one I had. It was language for language, what Mrs. Wynholtz brought up about, you know, maybe we're applying the old ordinance with new ordinance and how we get confused in the process. I just put that out there.
Yeah. So, I mean, currently this project is under the old zoning code because the new one is not available yet. It's not been certified by Coastal, which includes the classification of the zoning district, which will change when they certify it. So it's not really confusing. I mean, it can be confusing if you're a planner and they go back and forth, but it's under the old zoning code, and this entire staff report and presentation was comparing those old standards to this project. The only thing that I deviated from is in the presentation, I did want to take a look ahead at the design review standards that were for commercial. They, as I mentioned, they don't apply to this project, but I think it was an interesting comparison that shows how in the future we will be looking at design for commercial buildings.
Okay, good. I think that kind of gets
the things I wanted. Anybody else questions of staff? Joe?
Yeah, a couple more questions occurred to me. Somewhere in the zoning code, is there, albeit inadequate, is there a definition of hotel?
I'm not sure.
Well, that's fair enough. My speculation is there is a definition of hotel, but it's probably inadequate in terms of how the concept of hotel is evolving. And then the other thing is, will there typically be a sign that has someone in the hotel employee and a phone number in case people have complaints from the neighborhood? Is that
Yes, and I this is a little different than the other project that you're thinking of, because the manager is on site. But yes, there will be a sign somewhere in case of emergencies. Someone has a number to call.
Okay. The comment about large numbers of people up on a roof, and the event of some kind of catastrophic fire was a little bit concerning. But I take it at this point
it's met all the requirements for the fire department and the building department for safety and exiting.
Yeah, I find that surprising, but I accept what it is. But can you shed any light on why that happens to be the case? I would think that if you're building a facility that could have 15 or 20 people up there, you might want to have more than one exit. I'm surprised that isn't required.
I think from an emergency exiting standpoint, there is more than one exit.
Oh, okay. Can you explain?
Well, there's the lift, there's the stairs, and then there's jumping off the side.
I don't know.
You want me to say that out loud?
And there is a definition of hotel in this as well.
Please.
Motel or hotel means a single building or a group of detached or semi-detached buildings containing guest rooms or apartments with automobile storage space provided on the site for such rooms or apartments provided in connection therewith, which group is designed and used for the accommodation of transient travelers for a period not to exceed 30 days and for which nightly or weekly compensation is received. Fairly generic.
Okay. That was it.
Is that it? Commissioner King, any questions for staff? Because I'm gonna give the applicant one more chance to kind of close the loop, but I'd like to get staff involved first.
I just would like further clarity on this mural issue. Is it that it doesn't qualify as mural because it doesn't reach those standards and therefore wouldn't be allowed to have lettering, or what's the
issue? I think a mural is defined in our zoning code, and it might be the new zoning code, as artistic. So if the letters were artistic, if there was a background or something, then I think it would. But right now it's just letters.
So is it not allowed as just letters?
It wouldn't be considered a mural. I think it would be. It's also not signage because it's really not advertising their business. So I'm not sure that there would be a section of the zoning code to review it under.
So it wouldn't be a concern?
I don't know. It would be like if the siding of your house said Hardy Board. I think it's advertising someone else's business. It just doesn't make sense. I think our zoning code didn't cover something like this.
Okay, thanks.
Okay, then Commissioner Meyer.
In San Luis, there's a hotel known as the Butler, which is a full-service hotel with no employees. What would prevent this facility from being a two-room hotel?
Approved as a single.
Let me rephrase. Under the new zoning code, are the parking requirements or whatever is holding this thing back from becoming a two-room hotel? Is that going to change? So there's no way that this thing could become.
Not under the code. Yeah, the standard wouldn't meet. No, the issue is still.
Should we? What I'm getting to is, should we condition it essentially that it is in perpetuity to remain, a full-time resident? Because that could be a 30-day rental as well, I suppose.
It actually can't, based on how it's being approved. So, and we wouldn't be able to allow it to be, used as like a vacation rental, the residential unit. because it's approved as a, what is it called again? Manager's unit. It's not that. It's the
security unit.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so.
And so that definition is within our, back to the definitions, that we have a definition for what that is.
Well, it's security or manager's unit. A vacation rental is neither of those. Okay. So it would be from a use standpoint, that wouldn't be allowed.
Okay.
So, but good questions.
Thank you.
Anything else, Commissioner? So at this point, I'll go ahead and give the applicant, Mr. Green, an opportunity, specifically in certain areas like noise, that's everybody hit that one, it seems like. But other areas you may want to cover, like Muriel, and stuff like that, that you might want to close the loop for us on.
Sure. Staff did a good job clarifying the items. A couple of points that came up a few times regarding the roof deck. It's my wife and I's my intention to move into that unit and add 1,000 square feet. We're just looking for some physical space, potentially to raise a family there. And two bedroom, two bath is, it's reasonable for now, and maybe there's some room to expand. But the access to the roof is only the residential. There is no hotel access. This is not, I consciously, in our hours of sketching, our number one concern was not impacting the neighborhood in any kind of way. And so in terms of value proposition to the hotel tenants and occupants, all the from their standpoint, it's architecturally significant on the interior, and the hotel guests have no patio, no outdoor spaces. All of their common spaces are contained inside, and therefore there shouldn't really be any kind of noise concerns from those hotel guests. Regarding the mural, art is pretty subjective. I personally think that advertising Morro Bay is a good thing. Inherently, and I also think that that sort of the block lettering system, we have a more or less rough sketch of what that's looking like, that it's heavily dependent on the lettering, as opposed to, I don't know if you've been on South Bay Boulevard, there's a shipping container with sort of like a beachy scene painted on it at that church. If you take a peek when you go up South Bay Boulevard, that is definitely not the look that we're going for on the side of this. I do really advocate for some kind of lettering, but certainly we're flexible in terms of what exactly that ends up looking like. Any other questions that I missed? I think that sort of addresses the ones that I wanted to.
Yeah, I think you covered what staff may have already covered, but we wanted your final input on this before we close the public hearing.
I have a question for you. Is there going to be enough parking for all the guests?
It satisfies everything that we've gone through with Public Works.
Yeah, we're going to go ahead and close the public hearing. The parking requirements are satisfied according to our guidelines. So with that, we'll go ahead and close the public comment and bring it back to the Planning Commission. So I will go from left to right. Joe, Commissioner Ngrapia, if you like to start the discussion?
Sure. I'm certainly aware that this is a small, difficult site that presents a lot of challenges. And I have to agree that the design is wonderfully imaginative and novel and sort of fantastic. And I much approve of that. With respect to the lettering on the mural, I'm just reminded of Andy Warhol's soup cans, which weren't really selling soup cans. And I think in this context, the lettering, as it looks to be a realistic freight container, can be called art. I don't have any difficulty with that. The only reservation I have with this is, again, in the definition of hotel, and it really has nothing to do with this project, but I am concerned that we should tailor the definition of hotel so that it doesn't subvert our short-term vacation rental ordinance. Mm-hmm. I would hate to see apartments, because of a certain flexibility or inaccuracy in the definition of hotel, being able to be changed to hotels and then, in effect, increase the number of short-term vacation rentals we have at the sacrifice of apartments. So that's really, I think I'm looking at my notes here. I think I've addressed everything else. And based on what the applicant has said about his intended use for the deck, my concern about, you know, having a large number of people on the deck seems ill-founded, so that's not no longer a concern, so I'm fine.
Thank you, Commissioner. Commissioner King?
Yeah, and I just wanted to know ex parte communications that I was able to meet the applicant on the property to hear about the project more specifically. In response to some of Joe's comments, Commissioner Ingraffia, sorry. Mm-hmm. The mural, whether it's deemed a mural or not, I think it's an appropriate, especially for a traditionally industrial type of zone, I think it's an appropriate use. I don't know what the approval process is, if that just requires us saying go for it, if there has to be a final checked box for what it looks like. Sorry, I should have asked that before.
We can ask it now. Yeah. You can staff.
Does the final design need to be approved?
So if you're comfortable with what's shown, then just tell us that, and we're okay. There's no definitive. I was just looking through the codes right now. There's no definitive definition of mural. There is mural in the new code, and I was looking at that, but it's fairly vague as well.
Okay.
It does talk about artistic, but
right.
Again,
I just wanted to be sure of the process.
So the Planning Commission could approve it the way that it is. If we did that, we would want to strike the condition, right? Okay.
And I didn't know if that was the client's final design or if that was just a sketch-up or...
It's pretty close. Anything else would be immaterial, I think.
Totally. So in that, I don't have a concern with that. I just wanted to know the process. As far as the roof deck goes, you know, we have looked at houses in the midst of all residential neighborhoods over the last year that have roof decks that have just as much potential for parties in a residential area as this roof deck does. You know, we all like to use our outdoor spaces in whatever way we please. And my biggest comment on this is just that I live in a neighborhood in Morro Bay where every single one of my neighbors is a vacation home. And there's a bunch of vacation rentals where entire huge houses are taken up but for weekend rentals. And I think that the benefit of this project is that we are providing a space for a house-like vacation rental that's not in an all-residential neighborhood, and that also at the same time provides additional housing. And so I'm really in support of... if we're going to have things like Airbnb where people are looking for houses to rent, this fulfills that in a semi-commercial zone, in a transitional zone that's walking distance to our local businesses. And so I'm really in support of that, especially because it also provides an extra rental unit for long-term housing. And so those are mostly, I feel like this is a good compromise for the idea of renting an entire house as a vacation rental, which is just becoming the norm. And I also have to say that my guess is that a lot of clients who will be interested in renting homes in Morro Bay for weekends or week-long vacations might live in cities where their cars are a little smaller anyways. So that compact spot doesn't bother me either. So I'm really in support of this project and think that because it's infill development, it's on an empty lot, and it matches some of the other new development on the street, I think it can be a really good benefit.
Okay, thank you, Commissioner. Commissioner Meyer?
One of the neighbors who spoke, his name escapes me, Travis. As I go to Carla's kitchen in the morning and get a breakfast burrito, I saw his trench out in the street, and I realized that there's no sewer on that street, and so I'm suspecting that this applicant also has to create a bunch of essentially public works. This is a question for you guys as staff, basically. They have new water lines to come in for fire, new water to come in for the regular water service, and new exit lines for sewer, all of which will be essentially freebies to some extent for some of the neighbors, which I think some of the neighbors are pretty enthusiastic about. Is that, am I correct in assuming that, staff?
Oh, me?
Yeah,
there's three of us here.
Oh, sorry. I'll let you guys decide who gets the hot potato.
So Public Works did address water main line, water mm-hmm. lateral, sewer lateral, mm-hmm. frontage improvements, stormwater management.
So that's kind of all I'm saying is it's a benefit to some of the neighbors as well. Those will be, they'll be able to plug their own laterals into that new main.
I don't know how they work that, but yeah. Yes, it okay. could be.
There's no district being formed or anything.
Not that I'm aware of.
Okay. With respect to the mural, it reminds me, I think it was it's either Philadelphia or Cincinnati, one of the rooftops in Cincinnati underneath the airport where you fly in, I think it's Cincinnati, it says, "Welcome to Philadelphia" on top of one of the buildings, really big, but you're not actually getting Philadelphia, and that's what I first thought of when I saw this giant Morro Bay sign, which is essentially to the public. It's from sight, you can't see it. You basically see it from, you can see it from out front of this building, I think. I'm not particularly going to suggest that Morro Bay has the most fabulous art murals in the entire planet, and so the idea of staff being responsible for deeming what is art probably is outside the purview of staff, I'm going to suggest, without being mean. And I think art's pretty subjective. I would say that the scale of that wording might be a little large for public signage. If you're going to call it signage, you're going to call it art. If it was signage, it might be a little bit large, 24 feet long.
Yeah, so we're not calling it signage, though.
Well, if it's type on the side of the building, I would say that I'm not really opposed to it, but I would tend to want to make it some percentage smaller. And if I had the balance of you all up here thinking about that before we get to the whatever we're going to decide, that would be my suggestion on that. The parking situation, parking's changing a lot lately. I don't really have a problem with the parking. If it's the applicant's home, if it was his home, their home that we were talking about, none of us would be discussing the roof deck. And that's what it sounds like. The trick is if it gets sold, it's the next guy. It's always the next guy. So don't take it personally when we rip up the roof deck if we're going to. I don't particularly have a problem with the scale of the roof deck because it meets. I don't want arbitrarily and capriciously changing things that meet code. And so I'm not opposed to the scale of that. I am opposed to noise on the roof that exceeds our noise, requirements in the city, and that we have laws for that. And if someone has a problem with an Airbnb, they call the police, and the police come and shut them down. That happens in many neighborhoods in this town, and it's not the fault of anyone except the person who's being noisy at that time, and they can be noisy in the street too. So. Those are pretty much my comments. My comment about the solar was mostly because, you probably already know, on April 15th, the solar stuff changed. And I'm surprised the state of California still requires it, and that the solar industry is trying not to build any more solar on rooftops in California privately. They have too much solar now, it sounds like. That's my comments.
Okay. All right, well, I'll go ahead and close the loop on this one. I just think that I kind of understand that Sean worked with staff for almost 2 years to get to where we're at. You can tell when you look at the design, meets the standards, even the parking. We're granting an exception, but that's so very tiny, a very minute issue. Then when you go out there and you see what's happening out there in that community and you see what's being proposed, I think what makes this work is what Commissioner King says, the fact that it's a mixed-use development, which kind of we're going to get good at, I hope, eventually in Morro Bay. You know, mixed-use is going to be the way to go to make more happen with what you got. That's what it's all about. And you can see that this project really does that. And we don't have to do anything as far as our job, because he met virtually every standard we're required to approve, you know, without having to give it major exceptions or major, you know, giveaways. We're not doing that here, you know, because I think that the applicant did their job up front, so it made our job easier. So I'll just say with the regards to the mural, you know, the staff said something in there about conditioning it so that we get to the point where, you know, it meets our standard, back to standards, 8 by whatever it was, remember, 8 by 12? Was it 8 by 12? Yeah, the sign, remember the, was it, remember you put something in the condition saying, we'll do it when he gets it down to, was it 8 by 12? Yeah, but for the sign, whatever. All I'm saying is that everything's, you know, we're dotting all the I's, crossing all the T's, and we're really doing it here. We're getting like to 99% of a, you know, of a good project. So that's all I wanted to say. The commissioners, prior commissioners said it all for me. I just had to say that. I think Commissioner King hit it right on the head where if it weren't mixed use, it might not work. If it were simply a hotel or whatever, trying to put something in there like that, it wouldn't work. And the fact that the applicant's going to live there would make the other issues that were brought up that were very important, like noise, irrelevant. Because I don't think they're going to allow that, especially if they're going to allow family, you know, to, you know. But, again, that's what we heard tonight. Because so based upon that, that's all I have to say.
Can we condition the project such that the roof deck is unavailable by condition to the users of the hotel? Is that something we could add as a condition?
It doesn't meet the requirements. So, I mean, the permit is saying that there are no outside amenities for the hotel suite.
Okay. Thank you.
It also doesn't. In order to provide it to the hotel, it would have to meet ADA requirements. That's why it can't happen.
How about to the discussion of the scale of the mural? Any thoughts there, or am I all by myself?
Your suggestion sounds eminently reasonable, except when I'm looking at it, I wonder if you make the sign smaller, then it looks utilitarian and functional and doesn't look like it doesn't create what it's supposed to create. I mean, I have.
So you're enjoying the monumentalism of it.
It's supposed to be. I would guess that it's supposed to be a little outlandish and in a little bit avant-garde, if you will. If that's a silly.
It's like the entrance to the city on the railroad trestle kind of thing. I understand.
I'm not going to insist on it. I'm really not. Okay. I find it kind of personally amusing, but
okay.
But I could, you know, recommend it go smaller as well.
I'm going to drop that one.
I'm
going to drop that one.
Okay, then we'll stay with what's being proposed, right, Joe?
Yep.
Okay, good. So I'll take a motion if we've got one.
Yeah, I'll make a motion to move forward with staff's recommendation to conditionally approve the project by adopting Planning Commission Resolution 723. Do I need to read all of them? With the includes findings for the CDP 21-025, CUP 21-07, and parking or PKG 22-05.
Good. Do we have a second?
I'll second that.
Okay. Motion and a second. Any discussion on that? Planning Commission. So we'll go ahead and take a roll call. Staff.
Commissioner Meyer.
Yes.
Commissioner Graffia?
Yes.
Commissioner King?
Yes.
Vice Chair Rodriguez?
Yes.
Thank you.
Okay. So we can go on to B2 or we can take a break. What do you guys want to do?
Go ahead.
You guys ready? Okay, well, so we're going to go ahead and go on to B2. So staff?
That would be me. Good evening, members of the Planning Commission. I will give me a moment here to get situated.
Take your time. That's why I wanted to take a break. But it's okay. You can take your time. Are you ready, staff? Oh, Excuse me, sir. We're going to go. We're having a meeting. Yeah. So we're going to go ahead and start with item B2, staff.
Okay, thank you. So this item is 590 Morrow Avenue. This is a major modification permit request, MAJ 22-001, modifying a coastal development permit and conditional use permit for a modification of an existing rooftop AT&T wireless telecom facility at the Hotel Avisa, and the applicant is AT&T. And the image there, location is at Marina and Morrow Avenue. So the applicant is requesting permit approval to upgrade this existing telecom site. The project description includes removal and replacement of 9 panel antennas, remote radio units, and associated telecommunication equipment, and upgrade the equipment in the ground level equipment room at the rear of the hotel. The antennas and radio equipment would be screened by extending the existing rooftop fiber reinforced plastic, also referred to as FRP screen, on the northwest elevation by an additional 10 foot in width and 7 feet tall, and then a on the northeast elevation, constructing a new FRP screen that would be 7 feet tall by 12 foot wide. In addition, the project would include associated battery and equipment upgrade, electrical upgrades to the existing ground level equipment room that would be supporting the upgraded facility. Here's a image of the existing site as it is today and some existing site information. The Hotel Avisa was formerly known as the Comfort Inn and the Twin Dolphin Hotel, so there is reference in the plans to this as the Comfort Inn, but it is the same hotel. The telecom facility that is on the rooftop was originally permitted in 2006, and that is what allowed for the installation of the facility at its current height of 31 feet 3 inches. That height is allowed per our zoning code for height projections. And then in 2017, the Planning Commission approved a modification of the AT&T site to upgrade the facility. And it was at that time that they approved expansion of the FRP screening, and you can see it here at the corner of the building. The project zoning, is R2 PD S4. It's in a planned development overlay. It is not within the Coastal Appeals jurisdiction. The zoning code does allow for wireless facilities such as this in all zones with conditional use permit approval. Other AT&T facilities that are in the city include 475 Radcliffe, 800 Quintana, and there are 3 additional sites outside city limits to the north, east, and south. So as stated, this facility was originally permitted in 2006 with CDP and CUP approval. The hotel has been in existence since the early 80s. And Planning Commission modified and did essentially an upgrade of the telecom facility in 2017. The application before the Commission tonight is an application request to do an upgrade of the existing facility to provide for expanded capacity and coverage, as you'll see in the presentation on the plan sheets in a moment. They are not proposing to increase the number of antennas. It's just upgrading the existing equipment that is there. And stealth facilities such as this, where the antennas are hidden from view or concealed as an architectural feature, are allowed by our code, subject to CUP approval. The zoning standards require projects to include camouflage techniques to minimize visual impact to the greatest extent feasible. The existing facility is concealed by an FRP screen wall, and the proposed expansion of that screen wall would be designed as a continuation of the architectural extension of the hotel's roofline. The the proposed extension of the screen would match the existing 31 feet 3 inch height. It's not proposed to get any taller. The screen would also be painted and textured to match the existing hotel. The height requirements for our in our telecom ordinance as it relates to building-mounted facilities, they are allowed to project up to 12 feet above the zone district. The hotel at this location is 25 feet, exclusive of the elevator shaft, which is 29 feet, 2 inches. The project, as I said, in 2006 was approved at this current height, and so the project is not proposing to increase the height. It would be compliant with our height requirements for telecom facilities. And then the second bullet, again, restates what I previously said for the dimension for the FRP screen that would be on the northwest corner and then on the northeast corner. Here's a site plan that gives you a visual of what this looks like. The boxes that you see on the screen shaded in yellow are where the existing antennas are located. On the northwest corner, they are in a rooftop location. And on the northeast corner, the existing antennas are currently actually mounted to the wall. The proposed FRP screen where the new antennas would be located are in the unshaded boxes with the arrows pointing to them. This slide is the same image. It's a slide taken from the staff report, and it shows it zoomed in for a little better visibility. The wireless facility, it's organized by three areas or sectors. Sector A is in the northeast corner on the right. Sector C is in the northwest corner on the left of your screen image, and then Sector B below that. There are currently 9 antennas on the site. 6 of the antennas are located in Sector B, and 3 antennas are located in Sector A, and as I said, their current location is that they are wall-mounted. The project would remove them from the wall and move them up higher so that they would all be on the rooftop. So in the proposed roof plan, the antenna count would remain the same. What they are proposing to do is remove 3 of the antennas from Sector B and reconfigure and reorganize the antennas so that 6 of the antennas would be replaced and upgraded with new antennas. 3 of the existing antennas would be relocated so that there would be 3 antennas in each sector, 2 of which are new and 1 is the relocated antenna. And I'll show that to you on the next slide here. So you can see on the left image there, Sector C, that's a blow up. The blue arrows are pointing to the new antenna locations. The upgraded panel antennas are in gray, and then the relocated antenna is in white or just outlined. And then on the right side of the screen, you see Sector B, and that is showing the relocated antennas and equipment. And my pointer doesn't work, but you can see on the slide, too, the location of the FRP screen so that these antennas would be shielded from public view and also not accessible to the public. And then last but not least, this is Sector A, and this is also showing the proposed antenna. And as I said, the existing 3 antennas that are currently wall-mounted, they would be removed. 2 of those antennas would be upgraded with new antennas and 1 existing relocated, and then they would be moved higher to that rooftop location behind the proposed new FRP screen. And this is an image from the plans regarding the equipment room and the proposed upgrades, which include a DC power plant, converters, and the battery rack that would be to support the upgraded telecom facility. As part of the project review requirements, the applicant did submit visual simulations depicting both the existing and proposed changes. This is the existing hotel. Image, as you'll see, says Comfort Inn, but it has since changed hands, and it's now a Hotel Avisa. But the building still looks like this. The proposed antennas would be concealed behind this rooftop screen and painted and textured to match the existing color. So this is the existing, and then the proposed. that depicts the relocated existing and proposed antennas behind the new screens. This is showing the image from the northwest elevation. And then in the distance, you can see the new FRP screen at that northeast elevation. And here is the northeast. And existing, there is, so currently right now, the existing antennas are at the corner there. You can see the angle in the wall. They would be removed from that wall-mounted location, and then they would be removed, relocated to this location where the FRP screen would be. And then this is an image looking from... Yeah, thank you. looking from the southwest toward the northeast direction, existing and proposed, and apologize that this key map here is in the location, but this is how I received that. So existing and then proposed, depicting the changes. And regarding the RF report, applicant did submit a radio frequency report that was used to evaluate hazards and RF emission exposures. The report concluded that the project complies with FCC requirements. Planning condition 4 requires that recommended that the required signage be incorporated along with conditions that would include RF contact information, and condition 6, which would require a post-RF report verifying FCC compliance once operational. The modeling evaluated both general public and occupational maximum exposure levels based on the type of proposed antennas and antenna pattern data. There was a second report that was submitted by the applicant dated May 15th, which was yesterday, that staff requested to provide additional clarification on RF exposures to the neighboring residential homes to the east, and that report concluded that it verified that the project complies with FCC regulations. This was posted on the website as additional correspondence and was also sent to the Planning Commission, so you had that report. As I said, the report did verify that it meets with FCC regulations. One thing I wanted to point out for the Commission is that as a major modification permit, this permit is modifying the 2017 permit approval that the Planning Commission gave. And one of the conditions, so as a major modification, it holds in force all permit conditions from that previous CDP, CUP approval. One of those conditions, just for transparency here, is there was a Planning Commission condition from 2017, and it's listed here at the bottom of the screen, that should the city receive applications for two-story construction projects within 100 feet of the property where AT&T maintains a facility, that they would be required to perform a new emissions assessment and provide results of that assessment to the city. I would also point out that as an issue that is regulated by the FCC and not regulated by the city, if it was found that it did not comply with FCC regulations, the FCC would not permit the facility to remain. So there are those requirements on the project, but wanted to make the Commission aware that that does still apply to the project. So the project proposed is an upgrade of an existing facility. The goal is to provide improved wireless capacity for the area. The increased coverage is to provide additional frequencies to optimize coverage to consumers. They are not proposing to increase the number of antennas. They are appropriately screening the facility, the telecom facility, with as required by our zoning code. This FRP screen is designed to match with the architecture of the home and does not degrade the site's aesthetics. It does appropriately screen the facility, as I've explained, and is consistent with our telecommunication and height requirements specified in the zoning code. The applicant is here participating by Zoom, so they can certainly answer any questions that the Commission may have. One thing I would point out as part of the staff recommendation to approve the project by adopting Planning Commission Resolution 0823 is that I would request that should the Commission make a motion for approval, that that motion include a recommendation that the CUP finding paragraph B be updated to reference the date of the updated RF report. It currently has a January date. It should say May 15th. So with that, that concludes my presentation, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Yeah, and that was one of the things I was going to ask, that we use the latest report in this recommendation. Perfect. So questions for staff. We'll come back to the Planning Commission. Questions for staff. Joe? Commissioner? No?
Can you speak to whether you've received or how were the neighbors notified, specifically the neighbor most affected? And if so, how were they notified, and did you receive any response?
We did not receive any response from the neighborhood. We do notice every owner and occupant within 500 feet with yellow postcards 10 days prior. It was published in the newspaper as a public hearing, and then we also put up a yellow sign, which I verified today during a site visit, that it's still posted and visible.
Thank you.
Okay, with that, we'll go ahead and go to public comments. So do we have anybody in the public that'd like to?
The applicant is available by Zoom.
Oh, the applicant. I forgot about the applicant. All right, but ready for the applicant.
Please stand by. That would be Tom Scully, correct?
That's right.
Please stand by. Okay, Tom, I have unmuted you.
Thank you very much.
We can
hear
you.
Good evening, Planning Commission. Thank you. Thank you, Cindy, for the great presentation. I couldn't have said it better myself. My name is Tom Scully, and I am with SmartLink representing AT&T this evening. And just wanted to reaffirm that AT&T is proposing to modify this existing rooftop facility in order to optimize the cell site, provide better coverage for its customers, and also address the existing gap in wireless coverage. There is a noticeable increase in coverage that will come with these proposed modifications. As Cindy mentioned, AT&T is not proposing to add any additional antennas on this project. The site will remain at 9 antennas. And this specific site will also be equipped with FirstNet, which is an AT&T first responders network. So it will provide first responders coverage for the neighboring commercial businesses, hotels, and residents located in Morro Bay. And lastly, these modifications in the aesthetics were designed in collaboration with the planning department and the property owner. And we've worked with Cindy and the planning division to comply with the city's requirements. And we've also have a fully executed lease amendment with the property owner for this project as well. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Tom. And I was going to ask about the property owner and how you had worked with them to, you know, gain this approval. So because I was there today, and I kind of checked out the property, and I noticed it did change hands. I was looking for a Comfort Inn, by the way, and I passed it because I thought this was a different building, but I figured it out. So, yeah, so everything's been worked out with the property owners, so we won't have any issues there, right?
That is correct. Okay. We should be good there, and we do have that fully executed amendment for this project. There should be no issues.
Yeah, because I did notice as well that there's nobody there now, so it's not occupied at this point, right? It's not being used at this point, so I guess this is a good time to do this.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I noticed that. So any questions for the applicant from Commissioner Ngrafia?
I have one question. With respect to the installation at the entrance to the building, I actually happen to think that it improves the architecture of that front of the building over what it was. But with respect to the addition at what I'll call the back of the building that looks down at the neighboring house, what's the reason for placing it there as opposed to more in the interior of the roof so that it would be less visible from that vantage point and particularly from the neighbors?
Sure. So the reason for the increased height is to optimize...
It's not the increased height. I understand that. But as to why the actual structure cannot be placed further into the interior of the roof, I'm not quarreling with the necessary height of the structure.
Okay, so if I'm hearing your question, you're wondering why it cannot be, the antennas cannot be moved more within the building?
More into the center of the area of the roof.
Away from the roof edge.
Yeah, away from the perimeter of the roof. Thank you.
I see. So the same height, but just moved to the right or left, whatever viewpoint you're looking at. I understand. I believe when we were told by AT&T there was interference issues in this, and that height was not performing well. So that's why it was raised higher, and then it was put at that location in the middle of the roof. So from what we were told, that was the best location to keep the site as optimized as possible.
Thank you.
Commissioner Ingraffia, I could probably clarify that too. So typically what we've seen on these other wireless applications is that they want to be close to the edge to hear that, have that promulgation of the antenna signal and to have that clear pathway, and that's typically what we've seen in these locations.
Yes, but this again, I've railed about this before. This is, you know, there are alternative scientific evaluations, and I sometimes think we only hear the one that's most advantageous to the applicant, and I'd like to hear another expert say, well, you could move it to the interior of the roof. It would be less visible from that street, and the trade-off would be acceptable. That's what I'm getting at. I'm just commenting on that.
Commissioner King, any questions for the applicant?
I just wanted to respond to Commissioner Ingraffia that okay. I wonder how much has to do with a building, the existing structure and the weight. But I'm not. Who knows? Unless we're told
that occurred to me as well. I'm glad you brought that up. But you know, that says that ancillary structure is being placed there for reasons of economics, and we are dealing with AT&T, and this is considerably less than a rounding error in terms of the expense that company can sustain. So. Yeah.
Commissioner Meyer.
I'm always wondering about the cell sites, as they essentially are borrowing everybody's airspace, and when that borrow is less than, you know, 100% of what the FCC, if it's within the guidelines, I have no real problem with it. But when it's between 500 and 5,000% of the guidelines, which it is over the top in the airspace of the neighboring property, I begin to have a problem with that. But I don't know, am I constrained by the laws of the FCC in saying, no, we don't allow this in this location, it has to move 40 feet east so that there's no, so even the property next door is only at 100% of what's allowed, not 5,000% of what's allowed. Any comments about that, Cindy?
Well, the report concluded that it complies with the FCC, so the city would not have authority to say, move it because I'm concerned about RF emissions, because it's not our prerogative to rule on RF emissions. It's the federal government's.
Right. And based on, we just for the sake of the public, I had a conversation with Cindy about this already over email, and she did explain, and I'll just re-explain, that should the neighboring property owner want to take their property up to a higher height where this RF would be impacting them, because it's a flat plane of RF, it's not a radius, it's not a sphere. And if they were increasing with a roof deck or with a second story that was at the elevation of the antenna's bandwidth, for lack of a better description, that's the wrong term, but ray of projection, then it's my understanding that the applicant would have to then make their antenna compliant based on the neighbor's new construction, and that's essentially what Cindy alluded to. Am I correct in my comment there?
Right, that's how the 2017 condition reads, and the applicant's aware of that. Yes.
And the neighbor isn't here, so I'm protecting someone who's not asking to be protected. So
right.
I'll leave it at that. I just wanted it to be clear to the public what's going on, and that's that.
But that condition would stay in the going forward.
Right. It will stay in the report, and they'll, you know, they would need, should such an event happen, they would need to confirm that it complies with FCC requirements.
Yeah, it's not in this. It's not in our version, but it is connected to Spike because it's connected to the original. This is a modification of the original CUP, mm-hmm. and it's in the original CUP is how Cindy explained it. Yeah. So,
and I think that's a good point, Commissioner Meyer, because if we change things down there, then there will be new, maybe something has to happen in order to allow, you know, say, if we were to add height, then the applicant is aware that they may have to change things in order to make things work for the new development or whatever, right? So they would make those changes without deliberation, basically. You know what I mean? Just to meet FCC requirements.
Right, right. Yeah. Or, yeah. You know, modify the site such that it complies with FCC requirements. I don't know what that would look like,
yeah.
but
yeah.
And that's, you know, yeah. ensuring that yeah. it complies with that.
Yeah.
But what is the triggering mechanism for that, say the neighbor wants to build up?
So if the neighbor, so the way that the condition reads right now from 2017 is that should anyone within 100 feet of the property submit an application for a two-story construction, it would require ATT to reevaluate, do a new RF emission report to determine what the exposures would be and ensure that it complies with the FCC. And if it doesn't, they'd be required to modify the facility.
But, I mean, it's dependent on city, your guys' department to open that case up, essentially.
Right, right. Okay. Because we would be the receiver of said planning or building application.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I just wanted to make sure it wasn't on the...
I think your question is there some sort of flag within the neighboring property that automatically alerts whichever staff member is planning for the second story or roof deck or whatever, I presume.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay, well, and obviously Mr. Scully understands that, right? AT&T's rep understands that would be the case. He's still on the line. So before I move on from the applicant, he agrees with that.
Right, yes. And they have the permit approvals, and I confirmed this with him this afternoon.
Good. All right, so with that, we'll go ahead and go to now anybody else in the public, and then we'll go virtual.
Betty Winholtz, I have basically 3 points. One is that I think it does look more bulky to have that height and that width. You've gone up 7 more feet, which is almost a story, and it almost looks like a 4-story building when you're down then on Market Street or Morrow Street. And I don't know how we allow that so maybe I'm confused because what I thought I heard was that you can go up to 31 based on the 25 foot, but now you're going 7 more above, so it's really at 38 feet and 3 inches. Mm-hmm. So I'm confused about that mm-hmm. apparently because you're saying no.
Mm-hmm. No.
And so, but in raising these antennas, because you aren't going up 7 feet, then you're not adding more underneath. Is that right? So that in moving them taller, they're not adding more antenna because they're not moving them taller. But it sounded like they were moving them taller. Okay, I'll let that one go.
Mm-hmm.
And I like the idea of moving them into the center of the building where you mm-hmm. can't see them. And I'm wondering if part of that is because they're becoming 5G and that's why they're upgrading. And 5G can't have barriers in their way. And then my last real concern is, and I remember this from when we talked about the church a few weeks ago, mm-hmm. I think legally there have to be signs that let people know that these antennas are on these buildings. And so I'm wanting to know how many signs and where there be, and will the public who goes by or lives next door, will they know that there's that antenna there as well? Are there signs that the public can read as well as the people using the building? Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Winholtz. Does staff want to respond to that while we're there? Yeah.
I can respond or...
Yeah, okay. It would be great.
The building height is not going to increase.
Not the building, the antenna.
The signage.
The existing telecom facility is screened by this FRP screen wall, which is at 31 feet. It's just going to get wider.
No.
It's still going to be, when the project is done, it's still going to be a 31-foot tall building. It's just going to be wider. So there's a portion of the building that's 25 feet that has nothing there, and the FRP screen is going to be extended. So it's currently like this wide, and it's going to be like this.
Okay.
So there is a portion that is going to be, that's currently at 25 and will be 31, but it's going to look like basically the box got wider.
Okay.
Same number of panel antennas. Mm-hmm. And, yes, there are conditions on the project to put signage to warn of RF exposures. And I think that's it.
Perfect. Thank you. Terry.
I'm back. Terry Simons, Morro Bay.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk signage. The increased corner elevation, which would be the northwest corner elevation, has been substantially increased in height and width. Providing for a wonderful opportunity for a sign, I thought, when I first looked at it. And then I saw the presentation tonight, and lo and behold, there is, in fact, signage indicated on the plans that would indicate, I'm assuming, the new hotel name or whatever. I didn't hear any reference to a signage permit for that, so I'm assuming that that sign is grandfathered in or is somehow implied in this application, or simply it was an oversight and nobody looked at the fact that they're adding a new building identification sign. They did not propose a mural that said Morro Bay on it. I should probably leave it right there, but I can't help myself. This project is very similar to the church project, which was alluded to in the last speaker's comments. But fascinatingly enough, apparently different engineers interpret the FCC regulations differently. And if those of you who were here for the church will recall, there was a neighbor that has a two-story building that's basically in the plane of the broadcast band of that tower. And this applicant's engineer shows that that plane is not in fact coplanar to the ground, but in fact approaches in a downward angle. So the actual impact zone lowers as it gets away from the point of origin of the signal. That was not brought forth in the church tower application, and hopefully, as that project, the church project, moves forward, we will have learned from this application more about all of these broadcast bands and stuff like that. And I would encourage staff to continue to try to stay current with not FCC regulations, but with the interpretation of those regulations by the various engineers that go under oath, I guess, purport that these designs do meet FCC standards, because there does seem to be a differing point of view as to what constitutes complying with FCC standards. The reason that the building edge is the preferred edge for these signal broadcasts is to take maximum advantage of the downslope of these outward moving broadcast planes. Otherwise, there'd be no reason not to have them back in the middle of the building. But the building would, in fact, significantly reduce the immediate radius of the broadcast, which is of the concern of the neighbors. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Simons.
Hello, my name is John Whitworth. I am currently have a family member living in a house that we bought within 500 feet of the proposed site, the antenna. I have no problem with this aesthetics. Aesthetics is not the problem, but it is with the RF signal that is coming off of this. And so just to give you a quick background, my son about 5 years ago was living in the house, still have family members there, and he was getting headaches and different things. He did a little research and hired somebody who is a professional that reads these RF signals. Currently, right now, you're at 4, and I think we are going to 5. So, is one of the reasons they're going to put these antennas up. Again, I have no concern with the aesthetics, but what they're putting out. So we hired a gentleman to come out. He came out and said, there's an unbelievable high threshold. I mean, we're talking about radiation in certain areas. We went out with a meter, and right at the corner where we're at, it is microwave, by the way, was developed by the military. I have a 30-year background in the military. It was as a weapon. So the wavelength of that, if we were to put it in this room with the right wavelength, we could fry everybody in this room. And so we found out it was an issue, got about 10 neighbors together. Scott Graham came out. We talked to him about it. Nice gentleman. Great. Very fine. All these people sitting in this room, you're all good people. But this microwave radiation is a problem. We are not going to stop this. If everyone in this room got behind me and said, John, we agree this is dangerous, it's a problem, you would need to have a job. Even the gentleman that's a nice gentleman here that represents AT&T, if he agreed with me, he probably wouldn't have a job tomorrow. The regulations, the numbers that we're getting from FCC, I hate to say it, but they are not accurate, or they are masking. And so my job right now tonight is to bring awareness to the community and say, okay, let's take a look at this so we can protect our citizens. I think Eric alluded to it a little bit about understanding how RF works. Very damaging. And so, by the way, people that have moved away with headaches, all the other issues, once they moved away, many of these things went away. And so it is an issue. So I would like, please, to bring awareness to you. We need to look at what this RF is doing to our people and then maybe mitigate it. So what happens is that right now where we're sitting, we walked around, there's very, very high intensity areas, and we need to look at those. So thank you very much for all of us working together, see what we can do to mitigate and help the community. Thank you.
Thank you for your input, John. So with nobody else present, we'll go ahead and go to AGP. Do we have anybody in the loop?
Thank you, Vice Chair Rodriguez. Currently, I do not see any raised hands in the queue.
Okay, so question for Commissioner Ingraffia.
Scott, I seem to recall, I think it was based on my suggestion at the time that the first installation came here to the hotel, the notion of being able to hire an outside consultant at the applicant's expense to offer an examination of this. Did that make it? I believe it made it into the new zoning code, or am I making this up?
No, we had part of the conversation that was not included in the new zoning code as a requirement for the review of these. There are, you know, a lot of requirements that go along with the new code is, you know, far superior to than the old code that we had, but that requirement is not in there.
Okay.
So.
Thank you.
Okay. Thanks. So we'll go ahead and close public comment then. Since we had nobody in AGP in the loop, we're done. So we'll bring it back to the commission and staff for discussion. Yeah. Commissioner Ingraffia.
I thoroughly understand how this area has been taken over by the federal government, and we cannot address our concerns about the health issues or any speculation. But addressing the aesthetics, I think we can accurately assume that again, that only let me step back for a second. When I said that I believe that the plan before us actually improves the architecture of the front of the building, I wasn't suggesting that I was in favor of making tall buildings. I simply was commenting on the way the building looks currently, the way it will look once this new thing is put up on the roof. I think somehow balances that corner of the building and it looks more attractive, for whatever that's worth. But with respect to the new structure at the rear of the building, I think we can assume that it's done to maximize whatever effectiveness they're trying to reach with this technology. But there's maximizing, and then there is a level which is adequate for the service that they're trying to render. And I don't see anything in the record or the testimony that says pushing that structure further back into the interior of the roof, away from the perimeter, would cause the function to decline below what's minimum. Okay. Now, that may be the case. I simply don't see anything in the record to that. So until I have that assurance that it must be placed on the edge of the building for it to satisfy the purpose of putting the installation there in the first place, I can't support this. So that's mine.
Any other Commissioner King?
What I would like to know is if moving it back would then reduce the concerns of how it might impact neighbors. You know, like what would be, is there a correlation there? Not visually, but.
Oh, I'm only addressing the visual aspects of it, none of the technology. My comment on technology is I don't have an answer to my question. Can you move it back for aesthetic reasons and the technology still do what it's doing? I would like an answer to that. My objection is purely to the aesthetics, and I'm not willing to sacrifice that aesthetic consideration until there is a scientific reason that says I must.
Question? Commissioner, no?
I mean, my question is just like if it were moved, would the radio frequency that is of concern to neighbors be somehow, would it somehow lessen that concern? And I don't know if we can answer that.
I mean, we have no way to answer that question. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and really, that shouldn't be a decision point for the commission.
Yeah.
You really shouldn't be you know, basing your decisions on RF emissions for the project. We're preempted.
And that's an FCC standard, right? So we're not involved with that. Yeah. Okay, Commissioner Meyer.
Commission, stay away from that area.
Commissioner Meyer.
When I look at the maps that they've given us associated with the LTE coverage in its current state versus the new state, it's bright green, which means full coverage, essentially, around the building in this current state, and it's bright green in the future state. And so what that says to me is that having it one way or the other, according to your comments as far as where the location of the antenna is, it isn't going to make that much difference in the immediate neighborhood. And so I would be interested also in seeing those antennas placed with the other antennas on that tower right above the corner out there on the, you know, the northwest side. That's already a tall tower, rather than this new little mole on the east side of the building, because that's kind of what it looks like, this little hiccup. And I think that's what the public has been discussing here a little bit tonight, and yourself, Mr. Ngrafia. So I would share your comment about let's see what this project looks like with those antennas placed in on the same tower together rather than on two separate towers.
Well, I would go to staff, and I know the applicant's still in the loop, but I didn't want to go there unless you thought it would be productive to do so.
I do think it's a good idea to ask the applicant about that, because what Commissioner Ngrafia said versus what Commissioner Meyer said are two entirely different things.
Yes.
And there might be some very good reasons why they can't incorporate them into the ones at the corner, just because of how they interact with one another. But I would imagine there's ability to move that away from the edge towards the middle, and that is within the Planning Commission's purview to make, you know, recommendations or conditions related to that.
So, yeah, so.
But again, you might want to just ask the applicant in case they have.
Sure.
You know, some.
So I'm going to ask the applicant, Tom Scully. You know, we did close, but I'll go ahead as a chair open for the applicant's Tom Scully, if you're still there.
Yes, I'm still here.
So can you address the concerns that have been brought up by a couple of commissioners regarding location and other things?
Well, so with performance, when the project was designed, there were several rounds of deciding which was the best design, and the propagation maps are based off the proposed design. So it's not a blanket analysis. It's based off of the proposed modifications at that height, and as shown in the propagation maps, it does show the increased coverage. The existing location of it being in the wall, it simply just did not perform as well, and that's why AT&T wanted to propose it moving to the roof and having that new FRP box. That is the explanation I have.
But in the corner, though, you know, you moved it to the roof, but could you move it somewhere else on the roof? That's what one of the commissioners is asking.
Specifically, which corner?
I'll let Commissioner Graffia take that.
I apologize for belaboring this point. I'm speaking of the projection that's on the eastern perimeter of the building, what I'll call the back of the building. And I'm asking, that's very visible both from the Marina Street and certainly from the neighbor, but generally from that area. And I'm suggesting that if you were to move that unit more into the interior of the roof, away from the eastern perimeter, that it would be less visible and aesthetically more pleasing. And could that be done and still maintain what you fellows regard as the minimum coverage, or however you want to describe it? I realize that might or almost certainly would entail some significant construction and engineering, probably because of the weight of the insulation, you know, is in the roof rather than on the support system at the perimeter. But that we're really not talking about expense. We're talking about aesthetics and radio technology.
Sure. So it sounds like the rooftop design isn't an issue, but rather just pushing it back into the middle of the building as opposed to the edge.
Yes, correct. Pushing it back somewhere so that it would be more obscured from people driving and walking on the streets and sidewalks.
Sure. I do not have an immediate answer for how it would perform at a location in the more interior portion of the building. So certainly can do my best to try and find an answer to that, but I don't have an answer definitively at this time.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Okay. Well, Scott, can we ask anything else at this point?
So, I mean, I think I don't think have anything for the applicant, really. I just think the Planning Commission needs to make a decision about whether you want to continue the item and allow the applicant to redraw it, or you could potentially, if you were willing to, approve it with a condition that they work with staff to move that facility as far into the middle of the roof as we could to get it away from the edge, to obscure it from view from the outside. So,
and
happy to do that if you want.
And I like that because I was going to drive that. I don't want to continue, but if they could work with staff, Tom's there. You know, you heard what we want, and you will work with staff to see if we can get there and still do your job.
My suggestion was that architecturally, essentially, the antenna is all located in that common northwestern corner tower feature would be most pleasing architecturally. That was what I was trying to say.
Staff.
So that would be... It's a very good question, Commissioner Meyer, and that might be another one for the applicant. Is there any constraint? Because they obviously didn't put it over there to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know why that is, but I'm sure there's some reason.
Okay.
I think I can answer that because I did have quite a few back and forths on that screen on the northeast elevation when they first came in, planning application, part of that plan review, and asked them, can they make it smaller? Can they move it inward? Can they, what can they do? Can you move all the antennas into the northwest? Because it does a good job of integrating with the architecture at the northwest corner, but the northeast, not as much. And what I had gotten at that time was there was a minimum space requirement for the antennas in that screen, and they would not be able to fit all 9 antennas in the size of the FRP screen that's at the northwest corner. The FRP screen that's at the northeast corner, that's sized based on the amount of space that the antennas need inside. And if I got any of that wrong, I'm sure the applicant can correct what I spoke. But just to balance out the site, and so that's why that screen is, or why it's sized that way.
Yeah. And I don't know if the applicant wants to comment, but I think the commission has gotten to a point where we can make a motion. But if the applicant wants to add anything else before we officially close the meeting again.
I'll just add that, you know, we're happy to work with the planning commission or the planning staff and Cindy and work on if there's a way to shift it, if possible. So AT&T and SmartLink are happy to be collaborative with the city and, you know, make this work for everyone.
Okay, thank you, Tom. Appreciate that. So we'll bring it back to the commission. So Commissioner Groff has started it, but I think we had a couple options from staff. I like the second one, but it's up to you to make a motion or another commissioner if that would work. And the applicant's committed to working with staff.
I have no objection to the office, you know, talking to him and discussing it and making it an administrative decision.
So would that be a condition, Scott?
Condition? Yes, we would add a condition that we work with the applicant to move the location of those antennas at that northeast corner area further into the center of the roof, away from the edges, both on the north and that east side.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. So could you make that motion, Joe?
Oh.
With that condition.
Let's see.
You can simply agree with the way that I stand if you'd like.
Yes, absolutely. I agree with everything.
It's on the record.
And can you also include the CUP finding paragraph?
Right there, Joe. In front of you. Right, Joe? Right there in the screen?
Yes, I approve of that as well. Yes.
Good. Do we have a second?
Just to clarify, so we're saying you're leaving it in the hands of staff to attempt to coerce the applicant to make the antennas in a different location. What's going to drive that decision? The applicant saying we can't do that, or it's a little ambiguous in my mind.
I don't mind saying that I think the office is better prepared than I am to hear the information coming from the applicant as to the difficulties in doing that. They have more experience in measuring and weighing that and making a determination as to whether it's...
I'm happy to make it a shall requirement, you know, in, as far as the condition goes, meaning if they can't move it, then they got to come back and explain that to you.
Ah.
Fair?
Yeah.
You got that, Joe?
Okay. So the expectation is they're moving it, and that's what we're going to work with them on. The expectation is not that they're going to prove that they can't.
And by move, are we just continuing the wart in a different location, or are we putting the wart in with all the other warts together in one big wart?
Well, that's speaking of what Cindy mentioned, it sounds like that's not probably really an option for the way the thing's designed. So this would be more towards the middle of the roof, which would be a lot less visible from the surrounding area and probably much more aesthetically pleasing. I mean, I don't know that I'm not saying you need to agree, Commissioner Meyer, but I think that's what we're moving toward based on the interaction that Cindy's had with them.
So, Joe, so you're putting a little bit more on that cake, Joe. So what staff said, is that a motion?
Yes, that's what I would move, that they essentially attempt to persuade the applicant to move, to combine both structures into one, and that be more in the center of the roof with that additional amendment that Cindy mentioned. And we hope for the best.
Can I
get... And shall.
Yeah.
Sorry.
I know what Cindy's going to say.
Can I clarify?
Yeah.
So you just said the words to move both structures into one.
No.
I thought we were only talking about the FRP screen at the northeast elevation because there are some space constraints. They can't put all nine antennas in the northwest FRP screen.
You cited what my suggestion was, but Commissioner Meyer has such a slightly different idea, and I would be delighted if his idea would win out, otherwise.
I would like to suggest that they work their best to fit all the antennas within that location that I believe that they may be able to. And until they tell me absolutely they cannot, I'll be against that motion for that reason.
So staff will work with the applicant, and if they cannot do it, then they will come back to the Planning Commission, Scott? And tell us why they cannot do it.
Okay, just give me a second.
Yeah, something.
Okay, so staff shall work with the applicant to relocate the antennas at the northeast corner to move them toward the center of the roof with a preference to combine all of the antennas into the northwest corner FRP screen. That's the preference, right? It's to do that. But I think if we were going to move it over there, my take is based on what Cindy has said, that would require expansion of that in the other direction, which is probably maybe not desired from an architectural standpoint. So that's what we can ask them to show us they can't put it in that amount of space form, but they've already told us that. So,
yeah. Commissioner King.
Can it be that we ask them to provide evidence that it cannot all fit within the proposed northwest screen, and if that is the case, then they'll work with staff to move the northeast screen to the middle of the
center of the building.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Can that be the motion?
That work?
Yeah.
Mr. Meyer?
You guys three, or you don't need
me? No. You second. Well, Joe made the motion, so Commissioner King can second.
I can second that.
Okay.
I
think we get it. There's going to be two things we're trying to do, right? Combine and then relocate, right? If we can't combine, we'll relocate, right? Sounds like to me those are the two things we're trying to do. Staff will work it out with the applicant. Is that about right, Commissioner King? Okay, good. That's a good one. And so any more comment? If we don't, then we'll go ahead and take a vote, but I'll call the roll again since we do have like a long motion.
Okay, so Commissioner Graffia.
Yes.
Commissioner King.
Yes.
Commissioner Meyer.
No.
Vice Chairperson Rodriguez.
Yes.
Motion passes 3-1.
Now I know why I didn't call for just a outright vote. Okay. So now, are we going to take a break? So we're going to go ahead. The time is 8:16, so we'll take a 5-minute break. So we'll be back at 8:21 for AGP, 8:21. Is that okay? 5 minutes, you guys? Okay. I promised to call the meeting back. They're not 1 minute late, but sorry. Okay.
Yeah, we have lots of options. That's correct.
So we'll go ahead and start with B3, right? Is it B3? I lost my notes. B3. We're ready to go.
So joining us via Zoom is Kimmy Nguyen and Randy Russin, and they are with RRM, and they hopefully will be sharing their screen and giving the presentation. If that doesn't work, then I will be doing it. But they're with RRM, which is the consultant that we engaged, paid for grant funding to provide the goals and policies in the housing element update. That was the 2020-2028 housing element update. So, Kimmy, if you are there.
Hi. Hopefully you can see me. I guess I'm not sure where the screen I'm on is in relation to the Planning Commission, but hi.
We can see you.
Kimmy Nguyen. Oh, great. And hopefully you can hear me. I'm Kimmy Nguyen. I'm a senior planner with RRM Design Group. I'm working out of the SLO office, and I'm joined here by Randy Russin. He's our manager of architecture in our SLO office. I'll be sharing a quick presentation to go over kind of the state mandate that brings us here today and what we're hoping to accomplish with these design standards, but hopefully it's not a completely new topic for everyone. You're coming off the heels of your zoning code update, although I know that's still kind of ongoing. So this is generally an approach that we're going to be seeing more and more, we think, in the coming years. Hopefully you can see my screen.
So this isn't going to work. unfortunately, we can see it. It's just very grainy.
Sorry about that.
So what we'll have to do is put it on the screen here, I guess, is what we'll do. So.
Will she be able to see it and still speak? Or?
She should still be able to see it. Where is it?
Nancy, it might be smoother for you to give the presentation, and then Randy and I will hang around to answer any questions and go over standards in more detail if needed.
There you go.
Yeah, so we brought it up. So I guess we can do one of two things. Kimmy, can you see it?
We cannot see it.
Oh. Okay, so so I guess Nancy will then have to do it. Then. All right. Smooth.
Okay, so the agenda is we're going to overview the objective design standards and the process, and the objective design standards are site design, building design, mixed-use standards, and utilitarian elements. Overview is new state laws require a streamlined ministerial process for qualifying multi-unit residential and mixed-use projects. To comply, the city needs to adopt objective design standards that would apply to these projects. Subjective regulations may not be part of the approval process or used to deny projects. The goals of ODS: streamline project approval, reduce project costs and long timelines, encourage residential construction for both affordable and market rate. The process, fall 2020, the city adopted the 2020-2028 housing element, which was then certified by the State Department Housing and Community Development. 2021 and 2022, the city began implementation items from the housing element, including objective design standards, funded through the SB2 planning grant. Additional ordinance updates were accessory dwelling unit, a density bonus ordinance update and inclusionary housing fees. And those all have been wrapped into the pending new zoning code. The concept is that this would clarify design direction found in the city's existing regulations. It's intended to be used in conjunction with the base zoning district standards, and it prioritizes design flexibility, provides for visual interest and variation through very clear and measurable objective standards. Objective versus subjective. Subjective regulations may include personal preferences and interpretation, may result in uncertain outcomes, may result in longer review timelines and costs. Objective regulations involve no personal judgment by a public official or decision maker and provides clear and measurable design requirements. This is still objective versus subjective. The top one is residences should be designed with relief and building facade. Long, unarticulated roof planes should be avoided. And the change in that to make it objective is roof lines shall not extend more than a length of 40 feet without a prominent variation in roof form, such as a hip, gable, shed, or flat with parapet, or a variation of roof height of at least 18 inches as measured from the highest point of each roof line. Overview. The objective design standards is proposed as Chapter 17.31 of the new zoning code. All existing objective standards found elsewhere in the municipal code continue to apply, such as height, setback, parking requirements. Objective design standards apply to new multi-unit residential and mixed-use projects, 10 homes or fewer. SB 330 projects, affordable homes where at least two-thirds of the project area is multi-unit residential or transitional supportive housing. Assembly Bill 2011 and Senate Bill 6 projects, affordable homes located in commercial and mixed-use districts, and all other residential and mixed-use projects made eligible by state law. Projects are reviewed by the director and not subject to design review. Site design. The topics include building placement, parking, pedestrian circulation, open space, and landscaping. Many of the draft standards identify a primary street to establish rules and relationships to apply to building placement and orientation, emphasis to facades or entries, and vehicle entrances, parking location, and circulation. Building design topics include building articulation, building and unit entrances, location of windows and doors, and exterior materials. Design continues to look at establish visual hierarchy, provide variation and visual relief at a human scale, architectural treatment for entrances, and address privacy from individual homes and private open spaces. Mixed-use standards, the topics include facade articulation, street-facing setbacks, pedestrian-oriented amenities and elements, residential entrances, and commercial storefronts. Utilitarian elements are things such as trash, recycling, storage, and collection areas, vents and exhaust, and it cross-references to other code sections, including bicycle parking, fences and walls, lighting, and screening of mechanical equipment. And the City of Morro Bay 2023-2025 had some goals and short-term actions, and this is applicable to economic vitality, goal statements such as pursue grant writing opportunities. I don't think I've ever spoken this much all at once. streamlined permit process for residential commercial development, and then housing goals meets the short-term actions, implementation of housing by right, objective design guidelines, continued participation in the county's five-year housing and infrastructure plan, and facilitate more affordable housing units. The next steps to make revisions to the objective design standards based on the input and recommendations received tonight and through the public. In fall 2023, City Council will review and adopt zoning amendments, including the objective design standards, and hopefully December 2023, well, not hopefully, the grant funding deadline is actually September 2023, so we're moving this a little faster. Not sandbagging. And question and answers, and Kimmy and Randy are available for questions and answers and comments.
Planning commissioners, do we have any questions? Commissioner Meyer, we'll start on the right hand this time.
At this juncture, have these, has this draft received any public input or through the housing element update process, or is this the first time the public's seen or commented on this draft?
This is the first time this draft has been out for public review.
The housing element told us to go do this.
Yes.
Yeah.
And the state told us to do it.
Yeah, the state told us. So I mean, one of the issues, and I mean, Nancy did touch on it, but all of this, you know, the state housing legislation that's come out and is coming out includes, you know, the inability for the these kind of preempt cities' authority, right? They say these have to the projects have to be approved at a staff level. They have to be approved without, you know, application of design standards that we might have that are subjective. And so we don't have, we have some objective standards. We don't have a full deck of objective design standards, which what this is meant to do. So we can actually, you know, play in that area, in that arena. We can have these policies in place and apply them to projects that, you know, would be coming in consistent with the latest rounds of changes to the housing policy at the state.
What kind of leeway does the state give you to chase their tail?
I mean, it's not leeway. If we don't have objective design standards, we can't apply, you know, design standards, period.
I understand, but I guess they've commanded us to have objective design standards, and if not, but have they given us any time frame by which to jump through the new hoop?
I would say we're not commanded to do it. It's smart that the city doesn't. Because if you don't, then you don't have any ability to tell, you know, the applicants that come in if they're compliant with these new housing bills and previous housing bills, then you can't tell them what things are supposed to look like unless you have objective design standards. So this is doing that.
And can you tell us what the process will be? Public meetings, this meeting, another meeting, public, is there going to be what forum? What's the process going to look like?
So, I mean, the intent largely is to bring this in front of the Planning Commission, get your input, get public input at this meeting, see what the interest is. I mean, these actually aren't all that complicated. Mm-hmm. And then to bring them back at the next Planning Commission meeting to have another opportunity for folks to weigh in, and then make whatever revisions come out of that process and bring them back with a resolution that would allow the Planning Commission to forward a recommendation to City Council for adoption.
Mm-hmm. Commissioner King, ladies first.
I think I need more clarity around how this interacts with our existing or, you know, whenever it's adopted zoning code. There's a lot of references within these standards to our existing code. And so what's that hierarchy? How does that work?
I think, the zoning development standards are still there and they still are applicable. All this is doing is clarifying the things that were not as clear before. So there was, similar to our residential design guidelines, where there's a lot of subjective, vague references to what something is supposed to mean, this is clarifying and making it measurable and very clear, which is really more fair to an applicant. So they don't spend time designing something and then finding out that they missed the mark and they have to do it again. It's very clear.
So this draft in particular is actually built off of the ambiguity in our existing code.
I would say yes.
Yeah, if I could cut in. Sorry, Nancy. To answer the question, we tried wherever possible to, like the one example that Nancy showed where maybe the existing language was on the top half of the screen and then our new proposed language was on the bottom half of the screen. Wherever possible, where it existed in your general plan and your visual resources element and your housing element outreach, in your residential design guidelines. It's not a perfect one-to-one translation. I think to do that would be really, really difficult and maybe straying away from the intent of these by the state. But wherever we could, we were drawing upon existing design direction that had been agreed upon by the community. Yes, this is a value we hold. We care about sight lines. We care about privacy, we care about articulation of buildings. And so we're just trying to put a little bit more like clarification of the exact measurements as they relate to like the human body and human scale as you're walking down a street or the scale of buildings to one another. I hope that's not getting too like esoteric, but we did try to rely on your existing design guidance as much as we could.
Commissioner Graffia.
When I read this as certainly a non-professional in architecture, I ask myself what's not included. So I'm curious as to how the authorship of these various guidelines arose. Were you able to borrow and choose from various urban areas, or PhDs who've professed to sort of know how to what's important in terms of these kinds of. Tell me a little bit about how this particular set of guidelines came to be.
I think I might have spoken to it a little bit in terms of drawing upon existing design guidance and design documents as well as we could. But the benefit of what we offer as a company is we have designers who've worked in Morro Bay and in surrounding communities and in the county. So we have a feeling for what makes it unique. We felt very strongly we didn't want to overprescribe. We feel that when you overprescribe in zoning regulations, what you're going to get is something very cookie cutter, very cut and paste. And that's the opposite of what we want for Morro Bay and that we recognize as being really special about your design aesthetic and feel. But to answer your question of whether there was some PhD-led ground survey of street by street, that did not happen. This was more a more general approach, I would say, to capturing and hopefully trying to like guard against the worst offenders of design that you know don't want to take into consideration you know being a good neighbor or respecting the character of what's already there. So hopefully that answers the question a little bit.
It does. Thank you.
I would add to that a little bit. So I've been here for about 8 years now, and when I got here, we had very little in the way of design guideline guidance. We immediately undertook the development of residential design guidelines. And then we included, we were updating the city's general plan and the city's zoning code, right? And we included a design element in that. We also worked on a downtown and waterfront strategic plan that has design requirements in it. And our zoning code also has specific design guidance in it as well, kind of following where the development standard tables are in the new zoning code. There's specific design guidance related to articulation, where you place buildings and commercial areas at corners, where you have entrances, making sure they're prominent. And what this did is take it to the next level to some extent and provided metrics to it, which is how you get the prescriptive nature of objective design guidelines, is to put the numbers to the policy where it says, we don't want unarticulated wall planes, that, you know, we don't want unarticulated roofs. And then it kind of tells you, okay, you have to break up the roofs every 40 feet was one of the examples, right? So it applied measurements to them in some instances to policies that we were already talking about in the existing documents that went through a very, I think, rigorous and long process. So I think it was just picking up on what Kimmy said, because it's really true. That's kind of where we went with it.
Andy, do you want to jump in?
Yeah, I just thought I could. I think Scott covered a lot there, but I think I could add a little bit to that. What the intent here is not to create new standards. That is not what occurred. It is building on what your city has developed over the last decade, and identifying and acknowledging the fact that the state has said, if you don't have objective design standards, you don't have design standards. And we can do, and the applicant can do whatever they want. So in the case where you had 75% of your ordinance covered it as an objective, but there were enough opportunities for interpretation, or in the case of state mandates, ignoring what the design guidelines were, that this process of going to objective standards does exactly what Scott said, which is quantify these. And the way we arrive at those types of things is after, well, we're not, as architects, we don't have doctorates, but many of us have masters, and we do this design review all over the state, many jurisdictions, and are practiced in looking at these and have tested through observation whether a 50-foot, two-story blank wall seems like a big blank wall, or maybe it needs to get broken up every 25 feet. And we weigh those on our experience along with the scale of your community to come up with the appropriate answers. That happens to be one example, but there are others where we talk about heights and offsets from corners and things of that nature. So I hopefully that gives you an idea of how we get there.
Yeah, okay. So we're still asking questions, I think, or are we done? Yeah, Commissioner King.
Unless Eric had. No. Could you guys just review one more time the types of developments that will be eligible for these? Like that, what are the state, you guys mentioned SB 330 projects, AB 2011 projects. Could you review really quickly just what those projects are?
Sure, I can take that question, or staff can feel free to hop on. So the big one that was passed several years ago now is Senate Bill 330, which eligible projects are multifamily residential or mixed use where at least 2/3 of the square footage is dedicated to residential use. So that legislation carved out this new kind of streamlined path where saying for applicants and the community, hopefully we're setting better expectations for what these projects will look like by making them more clear and more upfront, rather than more interpretive and kind of ambiguous, like up to the planner. So SB 30 is the big one. The other big one is SB 35, but it's less applicable in Morro Bay just because so much of Morro Bay is contained within the coastal zone, and SB 35 has an exclusion for that. But it's a little similar. And both of those projects, or both of those pieces of legislation, do have affordability requirements. So a project coming forward, I think, I forget the exact percentage, but it needs to have a certain amount of dedicated affordable units in order to be up for this. The city has also wanted to go a little bit further and wants all new multi-unit residential projects where there's 10 units or fewer to go under this more streamlined route. And that's where anywhere multi-unit residential would be considered a by right use. So there's only a few zones, I think, where that would be the case. Although I get a little confused since the new zoning code hasn't been certified yet, which zones those are exactly. I hope that helps.
In the SB 35 legislation that she was referring to, the senator that proposed that was Senator Wiener, and now has pending legislation now to remove the sunset clause on that and to apply it in the coastal zone of California.
Any other questions, Commissioner King? None. Okay. So at that, we'll go ahead and open it up to the public, right? Anybody that'd like to speak to this? We'll go in person and then we'll go virtual.
Good evening. Terry Simons once again representing the public. The two of us that are here, we tossed a coin and I got first up. I'm thrilled to hear that this is going to progress slowly through the commission and not be pushed on out off your agenda tonight, because I think that the absence of the chair would significantly reduce the amount of professional input that your commission could bring to these issues. I'm not going to pretend to be a professional designer or anything like that. I'm not an architect or an engineer. But I do have substantial experience building the work product of architects and engineers and processing development plans as a developer. And so I think that a lot of what we see coming down from the state can be beneficial. And their most recent example that I can recall is the Laurel Street project that you folks agonized over because of what could only be described as a woefully unexciting residential building. Had these design guidelines been in place, I think that the short of it would have been that the applicant would have revised his design to make it more palatable much earlier on in the process, and both this commission and ultimately the city council would not have had to spend an inordinate amount of time trying to arbitrate between the applicant and the neighbors. Having said all of that and the potential benefits of this, I think that the idea that objective standards can be developed subjectively by a consultant or by this commission or anybody else is where the real challenges lie in dealing with this whole thing. The example we keep hearing repeatedly tonight is the flat plane wall. Should it be no more than 40 feet? Should it be 35 feet? Should it be 25 feet without inset articulation? Once these become formalized standards, they are objective, but unfortunately, in developing those standards requires a tremendous amount of subjective interpretation, as one of the consultants spoke tonight. We're reliant on their experience and expertise, and I'm very familiar with RRM. I've built some of their projects. I can say that they are very articulate, and their projects are very articulated, but they're also some of the most expensive projects that I've ever worked on. Because of that. So I think that the balance that we in Morro Bay need to look at is, are we trying to enhance the overall aesthetic appeal and the quick processing for the benefit of contractors and developers at the expense of not being able to build affordably? I'll just leave it at that, and I know I'm going to get many more opportunities to talk to both your commission and the council. Thank you.
Thank you, Terry.
Betty Winholtz, I think it needs to be extended for the public because I don't think they understand the implications of this. I don't think they know what an OBS is. I had trouble understanding the staff report, part of it at the end, sorry. And I thought Mr. Heller's questions that he wrote into you were very pertinent, and I really appreciated them and agreed with them. I think this takes away some of our uniqueness. You know, we have unique neighborhoods, and if we start this universal standard thing, how is it that we're going to maintain our uniqueness from my neighborhood to, you know, Radcliffe to North Morro Bay? And so I have a real issue with that. One, that the public doesn't understand what's going on, and two, that we're going to lose our uniqueness. And for me, and I'm glad it was brought up here at the end, that this is not mandatory for us right now. And even though it's in the legislature, we don't know what they're going to do. And so I would not jump on this. I don't think we need to jump on this. I think we like things the way we are. I like that you guys can mold projects, that you can have some subjective input, because we need that. We don't want to be looking like San Luis or Tascadero, because now we're all starting to have, I mean, look at the project on 41 and Main Street. If that doesn't look like downtown San Luis, I don't know what does. So we're not, I hate to see us go in this direction. And I guess that's my input for the evening, is that let's not jump on this. It's not necessary. It's not required of us yet. And it may be coming down the pike, but let's wait till it gets here.
Thank you. So with that, we'll go AGP. Do we have anybody in the queue?
Stand by just a moment, please. Currently, I do not see any raised hands in the queue.
Okay, so we'll go ahead and close public comment then, since we've all taken a bite at it. Now, Planning Commission and staff for discussion. Planning Commission.
Scott, so Betty's comment that it's not required, I mean.
Sure, it's not required. We could do nothing. Somebody could come in with a project that complies with one of these things. We would have to accept whatever it looks like.
No. Oh.
Yeah, I mean, like, it's not a good situation.
It's hard to comply.
We're doing this for a reason.
We are required to establish these guidelines so we're not faced with an alternative of being able to accept anything and everything.
So it's not a mandate, but it would not, the city's not, I mean, we need to do this because of that issue.
Yeah, there's a consequence that there's a consequence that we face by not doing
it. And maybe we didn't articulate that well enough, and if that was the case, I apologize, but there's a real reason behind this. This is an implementation item in the city's housing element. I mean, there's reasons behind it. Oops.
You're cut off.
Yeah, talking too long, sorry.
Commissioner King?
Okay. I'll go.
Okay. No. Yeah. Questions or we're going to discuss with staff. You know, discussion and.
Oh, all right. I'll continue then. I'll be very brief.
Yeah.
To eliminate a certain amount of arbitrariness in design is obviously a good thing. To avoid the misfortunes of standing in opposition to what state law says is obvious. But I, what has been expressed earlier, having no professional background in architecture, need some assurance that this is all we need or more than we need or less than we need. This is one of those times, I think, when, for lack of a better word, you know, common sense doesn't do as well, that we have to have some professional knowledge as to, again, what's an adequate guideline and the assurance that it'll produce what we want and not produce what we don't want. And that would be a reason why we should have additional public discussion. Perhaps we can get some people with architectural background. It's why we should have Chairman Roshan with us as well, and other people I can't even think of at the moment who should be participating in this.
Commissioner King.
Go?
Or Commissioner Meyer, excuse me.
I can absolutely see why Betty's talking about this perhaps making some homogenizing of certain developments, but I see many cities jumping through the same hoops that we're jumping through right now, worried for the same reasons that a developer can come in right now. And if their project meets the state guidelines, then we can't guide them any differently than their own design if we don't have an objective standard. That's my understanding at this point. I could be
No, that's correct. That's the issue, and that's the big concern on our side of things is, mm-hmm. And there's only more I mean, the number of housing bills that are pending right now, and they all use the same formula. They all usurp local authority. They mm-hmm. all say this has to be approved at a staff level, meaning no planning commission meetings, and you can only apply objective design standards like that. They all use the same formula. So getting in front of it from that standpoint, the other component of this, and, you know, I don't disagree with what was said, is, you know, it does also apply to regular projects, or could. Mm-hmm. You know, that's something that's worthwhile from the Planning Commission to weigh in on. It's, again, housing policy that we have now was to, you know, streamline the process, and streamlining the process means maybe fewer Planning Commission meetings, and you have some of these projects that are smaller that are approved at the staff level because we have these objective design standards, idea being that it's more palatable because we know what we're going to get. So having, you know, some input from the Planning Commission on that is worthwhile because I think currently, well, the draft zoning code, we can approve staff level four units. Mm-hmm. 10, like we were talking about there, would be a significant increase. Maybe that's not the right number. I don't know. But certainly worthwhile, you know, from a discussion standpoint on the side of, the Planning Commission.
What it makes me want to do is get heavily into form-based code around each individual area in this city because they're not the same. And it turns it into a much bigger project than I think you guys are prepared for. But, I mean, I could see conflicts just thinking about residential zoning versus downtown commercial. If I think about this relative, what I see in this document today, and consider what a project like this would look like on Morro Bay Boulevard, none of these guidelines apply, and there's just an enormous amount of work that needs to happen for this to work. But the flip side of someone being able to come in with a random project without our ability to constrain it scares me too. They both kind of scare me the same, to be honest. I guess we should just start going through it to some degree, and then we can be fearful, but we have to move forward. So I'm prepared to start on that if you want.
Yeah, Commissioner King.
I'm just wondering, and this might be for RRM, but how affordability of project development comes into the decision-making for these objective standards, like, because design does impact the cost of building housing, how was affordability considered? Or was it considered?
Yeah, of course. Randy, do you have any thoughts on that? I have a few, but you're the designer in the room.
Well, again, these are what we added or what we refined were not new things to your design guidelines. They were simply a better definition of the intent as we have understood it through multiple meetings and discussions. So we're not, so in that sense, it's not adding anything to the cost of affordability of a home. But additionally, in my personal experience, the time frames that the literally months that are spent going through an entitlement process in a public forum adds a significant cost to developments. And it is, I think, that component that the state is looking to remove out of the process with the objective design standards and administerial approvals that move the project along faster at a lower cost and effectively providing more affordable solutions to housing.
Commissioner
King? Yeah, also, if I could add to that, there is language in a lot of these laws that are coming down from the state, SB 330 in particular, in the Housing Accountability Act, stating, you know, you can't adopt standards that are obviously undermining your ability to build something. So, for example, RM could have written something that says, well, the applicant is required to provide 1,000 square feet of open space per unit. That would be objective. That would be clear. It would be meeting the letter of the law, but not in spirit. So things like that, open space is a culprit, lot coverage, FAR, things like that. Mm-hmm. If you're precluding the ability to build anything, that opens you up for basically state litigation. And we're seeing other communities where that's happening. But yes, I agree. That's the part where, or the affordability and the cost component of this is really where we tried not to overstep in terms of, being too down into the nitty gritty of things. Like I trust, and you get some great designers in Morro Bay. I trust a designer to know exactly what roof material is going to be, is going to work for his project. If you think the objective design standards will result in expensive projects, you should look at some of your design guidelines, which are 3 times as long and not as clear for the applicant or the public, I would add. It is definitely in our minds the whole time. That's the whole reason behind these grants is to start to chip away at some of the procedural things that have led us to inaffordability basically everywhere.
That's helpful. Thank you. Does the process end with HCD approving the design guide, objective design guidelines, or reviewing them? No, this is just something we're doing.
Well, and Postal Commission will certify because it'll be in the IP.
Right. My last question, is how will this interact with the downtown if eventually there's like an overlay or a downtown design district? How will this will be the like base standard for that, right? For
It could be a carve out. That area could be carved out of there if we come up with other standards. It can work with it. I mean, we don't know because we haven't got there yet.
Mm-hmm.
It'll be something that we have to take under consideration when we're going through that process. Yeah.
Could this be a temporary in light of the future?
I think that process, once we kick it off, is going to take 7 or 8 months, maybe 6 to 8 months, I'll say that. And so we'd be done with this before that, I think. So that would be something that gets into place. I mean, I think we definitely want to, you know, try to get this in place probably before the end of the year when the next round of legislation will take effect. You know, it'll just be more things that we're required to approve administratively. So,
question for Kimmy and Randy, just with respect to the time frames on these different bills, 35, 330, 211, 221. 62, et cetera. Those, if someone were to bring a project forward right now, are we subject to these bills right now, or what? Or when do these take effect? Just for clarification.
It sounded like you were reading from a phone book for a second there, but yes, these are enacted by the state in the last few years. So, yes, the city would need to comply with the laws and. Go forward with an objective process where objective standards exist in your zoning code already.
Okay. Are we ready to start discussing the document?
At this point, because we've gotten the Planning Commission has discussed its staff back and forth. We've got the consultant with us, so we're not going to get to a motion tonight because we have no resolution in front of us. So what would staff recommend? Because it is 9:05.
You've been at it for a while, and it is getting late. So I appreciate that. I mean, certainly it's up to the Planning Commission, but I think it's worthwhile bringing it back and start going so we can go through the policies. Yeah, specifically. Yeah. That's probably a good idea when you're – refresh. We can do it in the beginning of the next meeting, or the meeting after that, depending on how it plays out with the other stuff we have on the agendas. But we certainly could start doing that. That's where you want to go.
Yeah.
Can I make a few suggestions?
Sure.
Because most of my comments are kind of semantic rather than specifically architectural. And in many cases, when these kinds of subjective design guidelines are drafted,
they can be read in multiple ways, and I just want to point out something, for instance, in a couple of locations in here. I'm looking at E2B, which is screening with landscaping and structural elements. And in the third line there, I'll just read it, a private open space may be screened by a landscape buffer or dense evergreen shrubs / vines of minimum 5-foot width and 4 feet height. So the way that's written right there says a minimum 5-foot width and 4 feet height, but it doesn't say minimum 4 feet height. It just says 4 feet height. So it's already become a little bit obscure in my mind. I think what is meant there is minimum 5-foot width and minimum 4-foot height. But because the word minimum wasn't used twice, this could be interpreted by an attorney two different ways. And so I'm just being objective as possible, like ridiculously objective, to point out the flaws that come in the drafting of language like this. And so I would say that kind of thing is what we need to look out for throughout the document. I like the idea of objective design guidelines, but they really need to be thought about from all different perspectives.
It's certainly why we go through the process that we're going through. I think I'm certainly, you've given it a lot of thought, obviously. I mean, I'm certainly happy to take written comments from all of you. And then we can bring back responses at the next meeting we review it at, and we can say how we address the concerns that were raised if you want to do that. I mean, I'm happy to do that. Or we can just, in the next meeting we can start, you know, that we scheduled this for, we can just start kind of going through it section by section, and we can talk about it that way. I'll leave that process up to the commission. But again, I'm always happy to take written comments because it gives us something to address and to talk about internally and to come back with answers. So it, in the end, facilitates moving the process forward.
And just as a little input here, when I first got the agenda, the first thing I did is called the chair and said, by the way, we're going to have fun with this. He says, well, you're going to have fun with it because I'm not going to be at that first meeting. But we did, both of us wanted to go through the document, you know, and really analyze and study it. And I got to the point where I've reviewed it twice and still haven't gotten it all.
Yeah.
So I feel like it would be beneficial for us to, at this point, take a break. All of us go review the document, probably for the second or third time. Commissioner Roshan wants to be part of the process. So I think this will be a good time to take a break before we start going through the document. We could do what you're asking, Scott, which is to go away, submit our questions, but I don't know how many people are ready for that, you know what I mean, to go through it that way, independently.
I'm just offering it up.
Yeah.
You don't have to do it. We can certainly do it at the meeting, and you can just go through it, and you can have your questions then, comments. It's just we're always interested in getting, you know, the Cliff Notes version of the issues that you see so that we can have good answers for you. Again, that just facilitates
the process. And the benefit of having the Chair Roshan here is the fact that he's an architect, a designer, and we could hear versus him submit questions, which we won't understand, but we could hear and discuss things with him while he's here during the next meeting, because he'll definitely give us some feel for what's going on with some of these things, as well as all of us have experience. But it would be nice to come back and look at the report and start going through it together.
Based on our book club book, I want to push back against the idea that only an architect can
comment. Oh, I know. I didn't. All I meant is it's beneficial to have an architect.
For sure.
A full-time architect.
I would like this to be item number one on whatever the agenda is.
Yeah, that's up to staff, I guess. So.
Yeah, no, that's fine. Happy to do that. And I think I was just talking to Nancy and Cindy, and I think we can bring it back at the next meeting if you're interested in it. So
and that would be what meeting, Scott?
What date? The June 6th meeting.
Okay,
we have an extra week because we have five Tuesdays in this month.
Okay, so we'll go ahead and take a break at this point from this item, and we will bring it back on June 6th.
Yes, so that would be a motion to continue to a date certain, which is June 6th.
And do we have a motion for that?
So moved.
Oh, I'll go ahead and make that motion.
Okay.
Because, the chair made that motion. Okay. Do we have a second? Good.
And we got a second by Commissioner Meyer.
Yeah.
Take a vote. Commissioner Graffia?
Yes.
Commissioner King?
Yes.
Commissioner Meyer?
Yes.
Vice Chairperson Rodriguez?
Yes.
All right, motion passes 4-0. Thank you.
All right, so good. Now we can get to our next item, which would be new business. We have any? Anybody?
I just wanted to reiterate that the business of the meeting tomorrow at the roundabout.
Yes.
As many citizens in Morro Bay who can make it should come, and the roundabout is estimated to be somewhere between $12 and $13 million. Mm. I would think that every person in Morro Bay probably at least on a weekly basis is going to be affected by what's done at that intersection. And from listening at the meeting, one of the paramount things would be an absolute assurance as to the safety of the pedestrian, particularly the high school students, dependent on whatever is built there. So it should be of interest to everybody.
Yeah, and I know that in a discussion with a resident I had today, that will be for tomorrow, and then I believe it will go to council after that. Scott's going to, council's going to have a meeting on this.
They're eventually going to make a decision on it, yeah.
Yeah, so they gave me a date, but I'm not sure. But the next date up for this item will be tomorrow.
Right, yeah. So that's 5:30 at the high school.
Yeah, and AGP did clarify the location. So perfect, thank you. Any other new business? Anybody? Nope. How about unfinished business? Nope. Nobody? How about planning commissioner comments, future agenda items? I just want to make a comment that our chair did go to the Wind Farm Summit, whatever you want to call it, in Sacramento last week. So he attended 3 days of that. Two of our council members went as well. And somebody from the Harbor Commission, Ted. He told me Ted went. I don't know who Ted is, but
Ted Chaffone is our Harbor Director.
So the Harbor Director went. So we had some good attendance to the Wind Farm Summit, I call it. So I just wanted to throw that out there that did happen.
I think that our Regional Economic Development Organization, REACH, went to the one in Texas, if I remember correctly.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
So yeah. I could be wrong. I think there was a big one in either New Orleans or Texas.
Yeah.
They might have attended. So
There's another one upcoming down in San Diego, and there's another one like back east in like Boston or something coming up too.
Yeah. So I just wanted to make that comment, only that Morro Bay is engaged. You know, we are involved in that process. So, and future agenda items, anybody have anything? Nope. Okay, then Community Development Director comments. Scott, it's your turn.
I don't have anything else to add.
Oh,
thank
great.
You for this evening, though. It was a lot of work you guys put in. Appreciate it.
Okay, good. So we'll go ahead and adjourn, and that's it for now. See you at the next meeting. Thank you.